Capital Journal or its parent company, Morris Communications. Now, stay tuned for the news, followed by today's webcast of Jim Cates at CJ Online.
Good morning. Today's Friday, August 21st. Here's just a look at news. You can read in more detail in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. In the pre-dawn hours Thursday, tragedy mixed with a miracle, a case of life and death. Two women were fatally shot at a mobile home in southeast Topeka. Whoever was responsible left behind before harming one of the victim's young children. Leah Schmuck, 28, and Walia Tyndale, 29, were found dead just after 7 a.m. in the mobile home they shared at 1223 Southeast 41st Terrace, said Topeka Police. Police said a family member found the women, as well as a 6-year-old daughter, one of the victims. McWilliams said police Lieutenant McWilliams said the child wasn't injured during the incident, which he said is being investigated as a double homicide. The city of Topeka plans to add one line to the electronic vote board in the council chambers to include the mayor, spokesman David Bevan said Thursday. The move is expected to enable those in the chamber at 214 Southeast 8th to see how the mayor has voted electronically, as opposed to the current practice of waiting for the mayor to announce his or her vote. Officials expect the move will enable the votes of all 10 governing body members to be made public at the same time. Waste Management and Westar Energy took one step closer Thursday morning to the completion of building a landfill gas-to-energy facility at Rolling Meadows Landfill. In 2007, Waste Management set a goal of developing up to 60 landfill gas-to-energy projects at its landfills by 2012. Plans for the Topeka facility began about 2 years ago. Mostly sunny and pleasant today and a high of 80. Mostly clear overnight and a low of 52. Stay tuned for Jim Cates at CJ Online.
Go. Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School, educating children for life.
Hi, this is Carl Edwards here for RAN, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You want to make a difference? It's simple. Be responsible. Plan ahead. Designate before you celebrate. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
It's time for Jim Cates at CJ Online. News, opinion, interviews, and community conversation, live and online. Join Jim and his guests by calling 295-1150 or emailing jim.cates@cjonline.com. And now, from the Topeka Capital Journal and cjonline.com, here's the Dean of Talk Radio in Topeka, Jim Cates.
Good morning, Topeka. This hour is brought to you in part by the best buffet to be found anywhere in Northeast Kansas. In fact, anywhere in the Midwest, maybe anywhere in the country. We're talking, of course, about the Golden Corral located at 16th and Wanamaker, the Golden Corral. Folks, they're open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner, and they're also open on weekends for breakfast. So, again, we're talking about the Golden Corral. I'm getting some feedback. We're okay now? Well, good morning, Trish. We've got a guest joining us by phone. In fact, he's become quite a regular on the show over the past 4 or 5 years, and today we're going to be talking about healthcare from the Canadian perspective. Good morning, Joseph Crosdale.
Good morning, Jim.
How are you
morning,
doing?
Tika.
Did we get you out of bed this morning?
No. I got my time screwed up. I thought we were going an hour from now, but it's okay. The research is done. I think we're good to talk about this.
Good. We are good to go, huh?
Yeah.
What? Let's talk about the newspaper industry, if we could, for just a moment in Canada. The state of the newspaper industry in Canada. I know your wife had an experience where she experienced a layoff. I believe she worked for a local paper in Toronto, your leading paper in Toronto.
Yeah.
Lord knows we've experienced that in this country. Now, this paper, you know, the Capital Journal here in Topeka, is doing quite well, but we are the exception to the rule in the Midwest, believe you me.
Well, you certainly know where to work, don't you? Mr. Smarty Pants. So the newspaper industry up here is it's being decimated. And, yes, my wife, Cheryl, worked at the Globe and Mail, which is considered the national newspaper. She was there for 10 years in a senior administrative role and was let go a couple of weeks ago. And there have since been further cutbacks. And I dare say, you know, I work for United Press International, and the Globe and Mail is one of my sources. I can really see a decline. There are rumors circulating that there is no one older than 25 working in editorial anymore, and I can see it. It is to the detriment of the whole industry. Bad grammar, bad spelling, typos, that sort of thing. It's discouraging to see. It's not just newspapers either. It's affecting broadcast as well.
I have a question, Joseph.
Yes, sir.
When I heard your wife got laid off, now here we have lots of people laid off in unemployment. Do they have the same thing in Canada?
Yes.
Okay.
Our unemployment rate now, I think, is just above 8% nationally, which is pretty high.
So they get a certain percent of for a weekly check when you're unemployed?
Well, we do have the... Now, I forget. It's been a while since I lived in the States, but we do have something called employment insurance if you're laid off. And you're good for, I think, a maximum of 26 weeks, depending on how long you worked. But it's kind of a pittance. It's difficult to live on.
Yes.
So there is a bit of a social safety net there, but it's not wonderful.
Now,
in my wife's case, yes, it's gone the legal route, and you know, lawyers are talking about looking at the package she was offered, and it's a shame it has to go that way.
Right.
But I think in some cases, with the layoffs we've seen, that it would be cheaper just to keep the person employed rather than pay all the punitive stuff. But
right.
One of the biggest things happening in Canada for unemployment is in the manufacturing sector, particularly the automotive sector. Here in Ontario, the province of Ontario, we've got the bulk of that just across the border from Detroit and around the Toronto area. Thousands and thousands of jobs have just, you know, vaporized in the last 8-10 months. And there really is no easy remedy for that.
Well, Joseph, you've got one advantage over us. And, you know, so many people my age, and I'm in the aging baby boomer category, so many of us are working for health insurance benefits. Now, in Canada, you don't have to work for health insurance benefits. You got them.
We do.
Right?
Yeah. Since about the mid-1960s, I was a young boy when that whole concept unrolled. And or unfolded, and I'm mixed on it, and it's curious. Here's a role the media plays, And I have, in recent days since we talked, been looking at what the U.S. media is reporting, what Canadian media is reporting about Mr. Obama's plan. I'm a little divided on it. I'm very pleased, personally, with the system that we have. It has done me very well in my 53 years. And yet, at the same time, as I've told you, I consider myself 49% a U.S. citizen. I am concerned that Mr. Obama's plan is a little too ambitious. This is not something you do in 2 years or 4 years or five. I would think this would take a minimum of 10 years just to get a foundation laid out before it could be implemented. And we can talk more about that. I've got some backup material here to give you the pros and cons. But I do think minimum 10 years, and that span, it outspans any political term. In other words, this is not something that can be done in one administration. It cannot be done safely. It can't. So I'm thinking this should be a 10 to 15 to 20-year plan, and done slowly, carefully, all the I's dotted, the T's crossed, and all the states on board, and full accountability, that sort of thing. And Joseph, that's not going to happen in just a couple of years.
Joseph, if we could, because you spent a decade in the United States. You're a Canadian citizen. You work for United Press International.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't your first rodeo as far as taking a look at national health insurance. Now, if you could tick off possibly the top three reasons why national health care insurance is good, the top three reasons why it's bad. Let's take a look at the pros and cons, and then we'll get into more of the specifics if we could. And by the way, one of our legislators, Joe Patton, just walked through the door, and he might have a question or two for you. He's going to be my 8:30 guest, so just
absolutely.
Wanted to let you know that he joined us. Okay.
I welcome that. Well, again, looking at you were saying the top three. I do like the fact that I have access anytime to a physician. And if he or she is not available, there's always another one. I don't have to have a credit card ready. I just have to have my little provincial ID card.
Now, when you say you have access to a physician, Joseph, you're sick today. You make a call, you make an appointment with your doctor. How soon can you get in to see your physician?
Pretty much same day. Pretty much.
Okay.
And doctors here, they've organized networks. It sort of goes outside the socialized medicine. They've sort of been privatizing a bit. They're forming groups, and they'll ask you to pay $200 a year to be a member. I personally don't do this, but that is, in effect, your guarantee that 24/7, you will have access. If your doctor's not there, one of his group will be there. So there is one thing I like. Now, again, when I lived in the States, it was all in Florida, my time there. Yes, I had doctor availability 24/7 too. But I did go through a cardiac incident that cost many, many, many thousands of dollars that I didn't have. So there is one thing that I do like, the availability. Now I'll switch over to the negative side. You might recall that many years back I was a paramedic, so I worked within the healthcare system. And what does concern me, one of the negatives is, people will take abuse of something that's free. I can't recall over eight, 9 years, the number of fake calls we got, you know, the fake suicides, the people looking for attention, marital disputes. That's a waste. That's a drain. And there are people that will go to the emergency ward at hospitals with a cold. Well, it's not an emergency. Now, I polled a couple of people. Last weekend, my wife and I were in Montreal for just a little getaway. I spoke with a couple of people in the province of Quebec. I didn't really hear anything negative. They said, yeah, you know, when I need a doctor, I have one. I spoke with my sister, who is 73 years old. She lives out on the West Coast in British Columbia. She is mostly content with the healthcare system, although in typical Canadian fashion, she was saying, I wish they covered more homeopathic things. So, again, there's a negative thing. You give someone something for free, and then they say, well, gee, you know, can't I have the chocolate topping, too? And I also hear from friends around our local, you know, they'll complain that, well, I had a little too much to drink, I slipped and broke my thumb on Friday night, and I had to wait 6 hours in the emergency ward before they saw me. And as a former paramedic, I'm thinking, well, so? I don't think a 6 hour wait for a broken thumb is is over the moon.
I've got a quick question for you.
Yes.
Your name's Joseph?
State Representative Joe Pat. Joseph Crosdale.
Joseph. My name's Joe as well. Quick question for you. My understanding in Canada at one point in time, everyone had to be through the state system. In fact, private health care was illegal. I'm familiar with a court case that went to the Canadian Supreme Court challenging that because a number of the Canadians wanted to be able to get their own health care through the private system, and ultimately the Canadian Supreme Court struck that particular provision. Even though the law in Canada said you had a right to health care, the Supreme Court in Canada said the right to health care wasn't satisfied when all you really had was a right to stand in line because there was such evidence of long waiting lists for certain types of procedures. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. Number one, private health care is available and legal in Canada, but it's probably more expensive than it is in the United States. Those who choose to go that route, they can. What is illegal is if access and services are denied to people because of practitioners opting out of the public system. So I think that sort of answers your question. But yes, we do have private health care here. And as a matter of fact, Joe, I've got an article that was in the Detroit Free Press yesterday. There are a growing number of Canadians, particularly along the border, who are opting to go to the United States. Again, 50% of Canada's 33 million people live within 50 miles of the U.S. border, and that's based on climate. The Detroit Free Press is reporting here that there are deals being struck between Canadian provinces and U.S. border states. They cite an incident here of a man who required, from Windsor, Ontario, who required, some kind of treatment. It cost $38,000 to be treated in Detroit, and the Ontario government said, yes, we'll pay that. Just because he got his treatment sooner than if he had waited for that treatment in Windsor, Ontario. So, yes, private health care is alive and prospering in Canada.
Can you comment on that one part of that Supreme Court opinion where it made reference to the fact that the right to health care is not really satisfied by waiting lines, because it made it sound like for certain types of procedures, Canadians, if they went under the Canadian system at that point in time, and I can't remember what year that court case was decided, had to wait quite a long time.
Yes, waiting periods are a problem, and I can't recall the year either, Joe, as to when that was. I do sense that back then the Supreme Court was a very liberal body, and that is one of the things that the liberal media here in Canada loves to dwell on, the waiting times that people have to endure. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that a liberal court would rule and criticize, you know, poor people having to wait months for this, months for that. But as I mentioned, what is going on right now, as of yesterday in the Detroit Free Press, yes, various Canadian provincial governments, our social medical system is administered by all 10 provinces and 3 territories, but it is under a federal mandate. Each one differs marginally, but they are making gains in eliminating the wait times. As I was saying to Jim, you know, you give people something for free and they're still going to complain. Well, oh, I want the sprinkles, and I didn't get a pickle with that. And
Joseph, let me interrupt and reintroduce you. Joseph Crisdale, regular guest on the show, formerly the United Press International Bureau Chief for Canada. Met Joseph a few years ago in Washington, D.C., and he has since become a good friend and a regular guest on the show. Today we're talking about national health care. Joseph, a question. In Canada, who makes the ultimate decision, the final decision, if somebody needs open heart surgery? Let's talk about open heart surgery as a possibility. Does the healthcare professional have the final say, or are there instances where no government's going to have the final say?
Oh, absolutely not. No, if a cardiologist were to say that, yes, you require a quadruple bypass, there is no government interference with that.
That decision's always made by the healthcare professional. Government never steps in.
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, Joseph, I'm going to toss this question out to you and State Representative Joe Patton, who happens to be an attorney. The one thing I see that possibly might be good, and I'm no fan of national health care, I want to see it left in the hands of the private sector, but ultimately the one good thing that could come out of all of this is tort reform, because you can't sue the government. In other words, if our physicians are protected under national health care insurance, they can't be sued, as I understand it, if we go to national health care. Now, you know, the average premium in this country runs around $50,000 a year for malpractice insurance. My question to both of you is, where are the trial lawyers on this? If I was a trial lawyer, if this was the cornerstone of my business, if this was my livelihood, was medical malpractice suits, why aren't the left-of-center trial lawyers raising all kinds of hell saying, no, we don't want national health care insurance? You know, I would think this would be a case to where the left would join the right, and the trial lawyers being left of center, why they're not teaming up with the right of center conservatives that are saying, no, we don't want national health care insurance either. Joe, State Representative Patton, let's go to you first on this one.
Well,
where are the trial lawyers on this?
The short answer is I don't know, and I don't speak for them. But
okay,
why would they be silent? I think of the proposals that I'm aware of, there's none of the current proposals that prevent any sort of litigation against individual doctors under the current proposals. Now, if they went to a total one-payer system and had that provision in there, you might hear from them. But I'm not aware of anything that addresses that issue. And with a Democratic Congress, I doubt if you will.
Joseph Crisdale, how about you? A healthcare professional in Canada, can they be sued?
Absolutely.
So they're not protected by as a result of the fact that you have national health insurance?
No, that's vanilla and chocolate. I mean, they're obliged, if they're going to be paid by the state, they perform their duties. If they screw up, they can be sued. And, yeah, malpractice suits are quite common here.
Even though they are, in effect, becoming government employees, aren't they?
No.
Healthcare professionals, in effect, government employees, since you have national health insurance?
I suppose. Technically, they are self-employed. The average physician, a family physician, a general practitioner, earns about $200,000 a year in Canada. That is excluding their business expenses, but that's their average income, and I believe they are paying, yes, something $40,000-$50,000 a year for malpractice insurance.
In Canada as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I guess I was under the impression that, you know, if we went to a national health care insurance plan, then our health care professionals would automatically be considered government employees. And if that's the case, then my understanding would be
This is what I was saying, Jim. It would take about 10 years for all of this to get sorted out and clarified to the public. And again, I'm being a devil's advocate here, but for those opposed to national health care in the United States, I would say, well then, shut down Social Security. It's the same thing, or a very similar thing. I don't know anybody in the United States that's opposed to Social Security. And yet, national health care, I'm sorry, personally, I think that the right to be healthy is equal to or even trumps the right to national security or to bear arms or anything else. A civilized democracy needs to be caring for its people. But it also needs to be vigilant against abuse, which is...
Well, Joseph, let me ask a question politically, and let's talk about a public policy and a political answer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama's plan, as you understand it, mm-hmm. what would you change? What would you fine-tune? Where is he making a mistake in terms of good, sound public policy, or possibly a major political mistake? Where are the flies in the ointment, or do you see any?
The biggest thing, and you and I have talked about this in personal discussions, former Florida Governor Lawton Childs, he was a Democrat, a former U.S. Senator, he was the first one to go public with the fact that he was using Prozac to battle depression. In a very unlikely and unseemly sort of way, we actually became friends, and one of his campaign platforms was he was bound and determined Florida would be the first state in the union to go with health care for everyone. And I spoke with him off the record, and I told him, I said, do not base a plan for Florida on the Canadian system. Ours is good, but it has flaws, and you will bankrupt Florida within 2 years. And I do sort of take a little personal pride in the fact that he did forthwith abandon that whole plan. Now, as for Mr. Obama, I think he's trying to do things too quickly.
Now, you said that if Florida would have adopted the Canadian plan, Florida would have been bankrupted in 2 years. What is it in the Canadian plan that would have bankrupted Florida?
The rush. Again, you just think about the bureaucratic cost. Look at the bureaucratic cost. I don't know I don't have figures with me here, but for Medicare and Medicaid, they're enormous. And what Mr. Obama is proposing, I think, is valid, but I do think it's going to take at least 10 years of working and harmonizing the various states, getting the, as you were mentioning, there's trial lawyers, you've got doctors, you've got all kinds of associations that need to get on board with this. That's not going to happen in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years. And I do think that the plan should extend well beyond any political term. Because, again, I do consider health care to be a basic human fundamental right. More important than national security, more important than the right to bear arms, et cetera, et cetera. But it can't just be done in a couple of years. That, to me, is the biggest hurdle he's facing. And I'm just looking here. Yesterday, apparently Mr. Obama was on a radio talk show, and I'm quoting here, we've said is let's keep the private system intact, but let's make sure people who don't have coverage can access insurance affordably. I can't disagree with that, but it does sound like he's slowing down a little bit. I don't think that's his... I think the sense of urgency is gone for Mr. Obama, politically. But I credit him for at least starting things.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you consider it right to health care or that health care is very important, our Constitution doesn't have the right to health care in it. But whether it's a legal right or not, it's extremely important. The folks that I have encountered that propose the socialized medicine system have assumed that the only system that could actually cover everyone and resolve the problem is a government one-payer type of system. And I never quite got that logic. If we can resolve the issue, make sure everyone has access to health care under a private free market system, what would be the objection to that?
I have no objection to that. As I mentioned, we have both here. We have the public health care system and private. If I'm not satisfied with a doctor's findings, if I have the wherewithal to pay for private consultation, I have every right to do that.
Well, when you're looking at the figures in the United States, they kick around the idea that there's like 45 million uninsured. But when you start looking at those figures, it breaks down into a number of people can afford health insurance that don't purchase it, a number of people are actually covered under either Medicaid or Medicare or not signing up, a number of people are young and don't need health care, and then you have a much smaller figure of working poor that are working, paying taxes, but they can't afford the health insurance premium. Seems to me that instead of radically changing the entire system, if we designed a program so that that group of folks that couldn't afford the health insurance were able to afford it, plus institute government programs that would lower the price of health care so that everyone's health care dollars cheaper and the premiums are cheaper, seems to me that that would be the least radical approach to solving the problem.
Well, my take is that you've already got that. Between Medicare and Medicaid, you have that.
Well, we have Medicare, which covers the seniors. Medicaid covers the poor. But there is about 10, 15 million people just right above the line who are not poor enough to be covered by Medicaid. And that seems to be the real essence of the problem. It seems to me we need to target those folks and resolve that particular problem and to assist them in getting access.
Well, there's a forward-looking issue here where those who can't or won't pay for insurance and seek medical attention, ultimately they are going to, it's just the fact that we are all human beings, ultimately they are going to end up in an emergency ward with a heart attack, with a stroke, or with untreated diabetes. That is going to come out of the public purse. Not if, they will. That's the way it works. We're looking at today's figures, but we're not projecting what's going to happen 10, 15 years down the road. These people that are not getting regular medical attention, annual checkups, etc., they are going to end up in emergency wards. And guess who's paying for that?
Well, a large chunk of the uninsured is, for example, young people. I've got a couple sons. One son goes out, pays $100 a month, gets his health insurance. The other son could do the same thing, but he'd rather spend it for a Nintendo or computer game. Now, why should the government step in and insist that for the taxpayer nickel cover those individuals?
I see it differently. I'm just saying the government is offering something. I know people. I have friends that haven't been to a doctor in 20, 25 years. And curiously, just a year ago, I lost a very dear friend, an immigrant from Hungary, who refused to see doctors. No. Well, he was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer and was dead within 3 months. That was entirely preventable. The government did not force him to go to the doctor. He chose not to.
But you would have that problem with a one-payer government system as well as a free market system if people just choose not to take care of themselves.
That's true. I just think that you should have the option.
You believe that they should have access to health care, but you don't care whether it's a government system or a private system.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah, one way or the other. As I say, this is not I don't perceive it as a very simple thing for the United States, but it's not a simple solution. I just do think that it is one of the most basic fundamental human rights in a democracy that people have access without fear of financial repercussions. And again, I know there will be abuses and everything else. We're all humans. But I do believe that is a fundamental human right that supersedes anything in your Constitution. And how many amendments are there to that already? You know, there's room for one more.
Joseph, we appreciate you coming on with us, as always, my friend.
Well, I hope
we,
I inform.
I know we had you for a half hour, and we've run a little over, so I appreciate it.
All right. It's always a pleasure. You know how to reach me.
Joseph, good luck to your wife. I'm sure she's going to land on her feet, and best of luck to you. We will talk to you soon. Joseph Crisdale.
Right. Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Representative Joe.
It's a pleasure.
Right.
Joseph Crisdale, he's a good one, folks. We'll be back in contact with Joseph, and because I know there's going to be another issue that's going to surface down the road. we'll talk about some of the challenges we have in this country through Canadian eyes, from the Canadian perspective. Always interesting. Okay, State Representative Joe Patton's going to be officially joining me in a minute. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada's Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th. Between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka. 272-6100.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back. I think we're back. We are back. Good morning, State Representative Joe Patton. Hey, before we continue our conversation about health care, I do need to give a plug to Coop the Plumber, Cooper Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, 267-4100 for Cooper Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. And again, folks, if you have that plumbing challenge, heating challenge, or air conditioning challenge, you can give Coop a call. He does work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so it's a great number to have written down with your other emergency numbers, because he'll be at your house at 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning if you need him. 24-hour day, 7-day a week service, 267-4100. Oh,
good
glad
morning.
Glad you were able to join us.
That was fun.
Joseph Crisdale, great guest.
Yes.
And you certainly have some thoughts on health care. You've been a legislator for how many years now?
I'm in the middle of my second term.
Yes,
so
you are.
I guess that would be 3 years.
3 years. And as I understand it, we were visiting off air. You recently spoke before the Cosmo Club.
That's right.
In Topeka.
That's right.
And the topic was health care.
Was, interestingly enough, health care reform.
So you've got some thoughts.
I do, actually. Yeah, and I, quite frankly, as I share with them, I think these are very exciting times for us to be living in. I remember growing up when I heard about the founding fathers, I always wondered, you know, I always wished I could have been alive in the time of the Revolutionary War so I could have made a difference for the country. But quite frankly, I think what we do in the next 12 to 15 months will set the course for our country for the next 40 years. Because we're going to be deciding, particularly in the next election, whether we're going to buy into the whole notion of big government, particularly take over the healthcare industry, those kinds of things. And you look about what this current administration is doing. They basically have adopted the economic theory of John Kenneth Galbraith, which is spin, 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 spin. That put us in debt to China, which long-term I think is going to be a horrible situation. Our banks have basically become utilities. We have the government take over the auto industry. And now, in some sectors, they want to take over the medical care sector of our economy. And I think in the next 15 months, we're going to be making some decisions that will... We could wake up 15 months from now and find ourselves living in a very different kind of country. So I think it's important that we...
You know, the one healthy thing that's come out of all this is that the American public's now energized, and this is only the second time over the past decade or so I've seen this happen. Of course, the illegal immigration debate.
That's right.
You know, America was energized during that debate. Unfortunately, we lost that one. We had two horrible choices last November, Obama and McCain, when it came to illegal immigration.
Right.
Neither choice was a good one. We didn't win that battle. But once again, America has become very engaged, very energized on the topic of health care. But State Representative Patton, if we're taking a look at the most important issue, and I know you've got some strong feelings about national health care, but if we're taking a look at the big picture, is the debate on national health care more important than what is also on the pipeline that we're going to be hearing a lot about over the next 90 days, and that's cap and trade? Cap and trade scares me to death, because now we're getting into the basic economics of our country. You know, Lord knows Bush ran 4 million jobs out of America, but I think Obama could do possibly even more damage than George W. Bush did, you know, with cap and trade.
Absolutely.
That There's, could be.
It's the same issue.
The final nail in the coffin.
Absolutely. But the issue is, do you want more government? And is that going to create, that's going to take us down one path or not? And I think you're right. Cap and trade is going to be horrible.
My question is, Joe, I think both of these are bad.
Absolutely.
I'm with you, and I'm in complete agreement with you. But the worst of the two, would it be cap and trade, or would it be national health care?
If
we had to have one, and I don't want to see either one because both are going to be harmful to America, but what's the most harmful, you know, given the choice of those two?
That's a good question. I'm not going to answer that. I think they're both horrible.
Yeah.
And for similar reasons, because...
Yeah.
My concern is, I think
it's going to be hard to energize America on cap and trade, because that's a little more... tougher to understand that.
But let's be clear. It's important. Health care is important. Health care reform is important. But the assumption is there's only one way to do it, and that is a government system. And quite frankly, in my opinion, the government has created the problem. Let me kind of give you an illustration here. You remember Cabbage Patch dolls from years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Cute little dolls, and everybody wanted them, right? And there was a limited number of Cabbage Patch dolls. And what happened to the price? It went way up. Okay, now, take a look at the healthcare system. We have a limited number of medical providers. Now, add to that a government program, Medicare, that increases demand. Add to that a government program, Medicaid, that increases demand. And you shoot the demand way up, but you still have a limited number of providers. what happens? Mm-hmm. The same thing as the Cabbage Patch dolls. The price goes way up, and when the price goes up, that drives up the health insurance premium, and no one is particularly addressing the shortage of medical care providers. And it even gets worse, because when the price starts going up, then the government starts regulating within Medicare and Medicaid those prices, and that drives the shortage even more. Normally, if it was left alone, people would start coming into the medical care industry. That would increase the supply, and the price would even out. But the government, some doctors are opting out of even providing health care under Medicare. And some sectors of the state, you can't find physicians. So it's a more complex problem. If you could adopt a one-payer government system, say, okay, the government's going to pay everything, and you would still have a huge excess problem. So in my view, we're not really solving the basic problem, because we're approaching it from a point of view that's not going to do that. Look at some of the big issues. Our friend from Canada talked about access to health care, mm-hmm. and he talked about it in terms primarily of the uninsured. So let's talk about that and break that down, because it's important that people get health care. First of all, we mentioned the shortage of doctors. That's one reason folks are not getting health care, and that's not going to be solved by a government system unless the government begins to do something on the supply side to increase the number of medical providers, which none of the proposals I've seen have been doing that. But in terms of the uninsured, those uninsured, you've heard that on the news, the 45 million, 47 million, all that. They break down into five distinct categories. First of all, you have a large chunk of individuals that make over $70,000 a year. Well, those folks could afford health care insurance if they wanted to buy it. I don't see any particular obligation of the government to go in and provide for them what they could provide for themselves if they chose to do that. Secondly, we talked about the young people, the indestructible folks. I gave the illustration earlier, my two sons, one pays $100 a month for his health insurance, the other spends it on other things. Number one, they don't need that much health care because they are young. And secondly, they could afford it if they choose to do that. I don't see any particular obligation of the government to deal with that situation. Then there's another large chunk of folks that are uninsured that actually qualify for existing programs. We ran into that when we were doing the investigations on the Special Health Care Committee, not this last session, but the session before that. And surprisingly enough, there's a large chunk of the population that qualifies for Medicaid. Either they don't know about it, they haven't been signed up, in which case when they need the care, they're signed up and they're covered, or we could actively get them signed up. And there's another chunk of folks that just don't like that system. Because of the care they get. But those folks can qualify under the existing programs. You have another large chunk of individuals who are just moving between jobs. They're uninsured today. 6 months from now, they'll have another job that will be insured. And so the issue there is not being uninsured. The issue there is how do we get insurance that they can carry with them from job to job. And then the final problem is that group of folks who are the working poor, who are paying taxes, but they just can't find enough money at the end of the month to pay for health insurance premium, and you've got two issues there. But primarily the issue there is the high medical price and the high insurance price. So we need to zero in on programs that will make that health insurance premium lower. Or subsidize it, but you could deal with that sector of the uninsured without blowing up the entire healthcare system. And you think about it, we have the best healthcare system in the world, and people come to the United States for surgical procedures. People come to the United States when they want advanced healthcare, and it's expensive. But it's expensive for several reasons. We have a shortage of healthcare providers, but also we have high technology. And we have the best drugs in the world, and Americans like that. So there's things that we can do to lower the health insurance premiums, particularly for the working poor.
Yeah, you know, one of the problems you didn't address, and that's the challenge of pre-existing conditions. Now, this is something where the private sector needs to clean their act up, so to speak. You know, if we're going to turn public opinion around, I think, you know, the challenge of pre-existing conditions is one of the areas that we really need to work on. You know, taking care of that poor, unfortunate individual through no fault of their own are stuck out there with no health insurance. They want to work, they want to have health insurance, but they've got this pre-existing medical condition. I would hope the government would work on that. But State Representative Joe Patton, you know, to simplify the solution, wouldn't one of the possible solutions be, if we're going to start getting into funding, national health care is simply providing an economic incentive for employers that for every employee you have on the books, you know, we'll give you $100 a month government money to help pay for your employee's health care. That way, the employer still would have the choice of going out in the private sector and determining what level of health care they want to purchase for their employees.
I think,
and there we've got government coming in, and if government wants to intervene, we still have the private sector making that decision. We're taking care of working Americans. And I guess being a Republican, I'm much more concerned about working Americans than I am somebody that's living off the government dole.
Well,
you know, again, incentivizing the fact that you need to go to work.
Well, I think that's great, but the problem you run into, as long as it's tied to the employer, is the portability problem. If I need to own a health insurance policy, so do this. Instead of subsidizing the employer, these are working poor that can't afford it.
Right.
Give them a refundable income tax credit on their taxes for that health insurance premium,
yeah.
So that if they can't afford that health insurance premium, then they own the health insurance policy. And when they leave that employer, they can take that health insurance policy with them. And that's where you get into the pre-existing problem. The pre-existing problem is, I get fired, I don't have health insurance, I get hired 6 months from now, I get a new policy, and they're not going to cover me because it's a pre-existing problem. And so what you have to
that
have...
That would address the portability.
Yeah,
that
you
would
have
address
to,
the pre-existing condition. Okay.
You get your health insurance,
right.
You carry that with you, and that resolves both of those problems. But you've got another big dynamic that's actually created by government. One-third to 40% of your... one-third of your 40% of your health insurance premium is actually created by government regulation and mandates. If we were to take the same policy that we have in health insurance,
uh-huh.
And we applied it to automobiles, it would be like saying anybody could buy an automobile if you want to. But if you buy an automobile, you have to buy a Lexus. You know, because yeah, we have all these mandates that has to be in all the insurance policies. And well, certain people couldn't afford a Lexus. Well, certain people can't afford the high-end Cadillac version of health insurance that the government requires. Another thing we can do is allow the states to have and offer mandate light or mandate free plans so that an individual who doesn't need all the bells and whistles can buy an insurance policy that is much, much cheaper. That'd cut the insurance premium by a third to 40%. Something else we can do. We're locked in a state-by-state regulation of health insurance. So if there's a very cheap plan in California that's approved by the regulators in California, I'm not able to purchase that. I've got to purchase plans that are approved in Kansas. You can create a dynamic where if a plan is approved by any regulator in the United States, I should be able to purchase that. And what you would do by that is create competition between insurance companies nationwide. You can even do it worldwide. And that would drive down the premiums of health insurance dramatically. So there's a number of things where government has stepped in and created a problem, increasing the medical care costs, increasing the health insurance costs. And if we began to design public policy in a way that takes those factors out and creates more of a free market dynamic, you're going to long-term resolve the problem and get the access to health care that people need, get it in a way that's affordable, and not dramatically increase government. And I think that's the key.
Your prediction, where's this headed? Because, again, you know, I've been encouraged by these town hall meetings, just again, because we've energized America. You know, America is now speaking out. As a result of this, do you think we're going to see another defeat, which we suffered a defeat, you know, going through the illegal immigration debate when America did speak out?
What you're going to see, I think, is the Obama people are very good at campaigning, and they can read the polls, and they can read polls. And so they're going to recraft their message, and what you're going to end up with is some kind of program where the government creates, they're going to call it a cooperative or a nonprofit, some kind of entity that can provide health insurance lower than private health insurance companies. Because in order for them to get to a one-payer system, they've got to drive private health insurance companies out of business. And the only way to do that is to create a government option so that they have, that they're not paying any taxes, they're under government regulation, they're forced on a premium, it comes right out of the taxpayers' pockets, and no insurance company in the world can compete with that. And in my view, that would increase the problem. Long term.
Well, I hope, State Representative Joe Patton, you know, at least we can extend the debate, because I look at every day that we've extended this health care debate, that's one more day we've got under our belts to where we're not talking about cap and trade. And I can't imagine Obama running both of these simultaneously. He's got to take care of this one first.
Absolutely.
Before we get into cap and trade.
Right.
Hopefully, if we can lengthen this debate, we might go through the November elections in 2010 and at least have the votes to stop this craziness on cap and trade.
Yeah, it's a huge political problem for him because the further he comes to the middle with moderate policy, either on the environment or with health care, the more he loses the radical left in his own party. And so it's going to be hard for him to find a majority, even though they control Congress.
Yeah, the politics of it.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Although, you know, we Republicans, we screwed this thing up over the past decade just beyond belief as well. So, again, we have only ourselves to blame, but maybe this time we've learned our lesson. And we'll start electing Republicans when they go to Washington. We'll act like Republicans.
Well, they need to begin talking about proposals that make sense to the American people. I don't think there's some valid criticism that they just say no to everything. I think they have to have positive agendas, public policies that make sense, that appeal to all spectrums in the political debate, and resolve these problems. If we do that, then the American people will elect Republicans.
Yeah. Hell, it is a problem, you know, because I think we've got the right philosophy. We just don't put it in practice. And this came out on Kansas Liberty. I'm sure you saw it about a week ago. Alliance of Republican Moderates and Democrats are the key to liberal successes. And Gallup recently ran a poll, folks. This is interesting as can be. And the vast majority of Americans, when asked, identify themselves as conservatives versus liberals. There are currently three states in the country to where statistically people in these three states, they're pretty much divided on whether they perceive themselves as conservatives or liberals. And the three most liberal states, or balanced states, I should say, would be Hawaii, Vermont, and Massachusetts. Three states to where, if the voters ask, are going to divide themselves into two camps of equal numbers, conservative and liberals.
So but it's Hawaii, Massachusetts, what's the other?
Hawaii, Vermont, and Massachusetts.
Okay, that makes sense.
And those three make all the sense in the world. But it points out, and I've been talking about this off and on for years, that if you were to cover up the number, the names of the states, and if you were to take a look at Republican or Democrat representation at the state legislative level, and if you were to take a look at per capita spending, you know, what we consider to be traditional conservative issues, you couldn't tell the difference. In other words, a state that is Republican in the House, Republican in the Senate, their record on tax and spend issues possibly is to the left of center of a half a dozen states that are Democrat-controlled. Again, we haven't done a very good job as far as Republicans acting like Republicans, and the example was given of Utah versus South Dakota. South Dakota is Democrat-leaning. Utah is perceived as being the most Republican state in the union. Well, if you take a look at South Dakota versus Utah legislatively, South Dakota showcases better than Utah does.
Is that right?
On traditional Republican issues.
That's fascinating.
So many candidates that are Republican by registration, you know, run on traditional Republican views, values, and beliefs once in. I don't know what happens to these people. You're one of the exceptions to the rule.
Well, thank you.
You are what I perceive as the classic traditional Republican.
Thank you.
My compliments.
I appreciate that.
Because I think our philosophy's right, but so many in our party just don't practice that.
Well, I think what's happening in the electorate is that people were pretty apathetic, and they would elect someone and just let it go. But I think people now are beginning, with the town hall meetings and organizations that are starting, they're beginning to become aware that they have to pay attention, be involved. The whole system favors people that are involved and involved over a long period of time. And I think people are beginning to realize they just can't send people up to the legislature or Congress and not paying attention to it. They have to watch what's going on.
You bet. The informed electorate. Although City Councilwoman Deborah Swank would disagree with that statement, we're going to be talking about that statement when John Arnold joins us on the flip side of the news. I think Kevin Dole's coming in. State Representative Joe Patton, you're more than welcome to hang around for a media roundtable discussion.
I appreciate it. Got to take off.
We appreciate you coming in.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
State Representative Joe Patton. Okay, Trish Johnston and the news straight ahead, and then we've got an hour to where we're going to be talking about the top stories of the week. John Arnold, Kevin Dole with TK Magazine, I believe, is coming in today. Next week is TV 49 day, and then the following week, Jim Ogle will be back with us representing WIBW TV 13. It's all coming up. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
Good morning. Here's just a look at news. You can read in more detail in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. In the pre-dawn hours Thursday, tragedy mixed with a miracle, a case of life and death. Two women were fatally shot at a mobile home in southeast Topeka. Whoever was responsible left before harming one of the victims' young children. Leah Schmuck, 28, and Walia Tinsdale, 29, was found dead just after 7 a.m. in a mobile home they shared at 1223 Southeast 41st Terrace, said Topeka police. Police said a family member found the women, as well as a 6-year-old daughter of one of the victims. The child wasn't injured during the incident, which he said is being investigated as a double homicide. The city of Topeka plans to add one line to the electronic vote board in the council chambers to include the mayor. The move is expected to enable those in the chamber to see how the mayor has voted electronically, as opposed to the current practice of waiting for the mayor to announce his or her vote. Officials expect the move will enable the votes of all 10 governing body members to be public at the same time. Waste Management and Westar Energy took one step closer Thursday morning to the completion of building a land gas-to-energy facility at Rolling Meadows Landfill. In 2007, Waste Management set a goal of developing up to 60 landfill gas-to-energy projects at its landfills by 2012. Plans for the Topeka's facility began about 2 years ago. Mostly sunny and pleasant today and a high of 80, mostly clear overnight and a low of 52. Stay tuned for Jim Cates at CJ Online. He'll return.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Go. Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School. Educating children for life.
Excuse me, why are you saving those old eyeglasses? You know the ones. stuck away in the desk drawer, haven't been worn in years. Yeah, those. You should donate them to your local Lions Club. Lions Clubs have been collecting used eyeglasses for years. They'll take your old eyeglasses and recycle them for someone in need of proper eyewear. Call your local Lions Club for information on where you can donate your old eyeglasses. Lions Clubs International. We serve.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back. Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker, the best sports bar to be found anywhere, folks. I'll tell you, football, well, it's on tonight. The Chiefs are on tonight. What a better place to watch the game than with your friends at Jeremiah Bullfrog's. Let me tell you, when we get into the regular season, NFL Sundays, you'll see a lot of Chiefs jerseys at Jeremiah Bullfrog's because, again, everywhere you look in there, there is a TV, 55 TVs. But, again, if you could give two hoots and a holler about the Kansas City Chiefs and you happen to be a Seattle Seahawks fan, not a problem because there's going to be a group of Seattle Seahawks fans sure shooting at Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker. You will see every team represented in there. And there will be a TV turned to a channel that is going to showcase your favorite team. Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker. That's why it's known as the best sports bar to be found anywhere in the country. Good morning, John Arnold.
Yeah, good morning, Jim.
Well, we might be here all by our lonesome today. We did not make the paper today, and as a result...
I saw that.
Yeah, Kevin Dole... might have looked in the paper this morning on page 2A to where normally it's got our list of scheduled guests and might have seen that, well, there's nothing on page 2A today referencing this show, so he might have just rolled over and gone back to sleep. I don't know. Well, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I have been on vacation.
Morning out
oh, it
there,
is.
Dear.
Well, I've been on vacation
like
all week.
Oh, we have. Well,
yes. We took off Monday.
How can you tell?
Well, we went to Memphis and toured Graceland.
Oh, did you really?
Have you ever done that?
Never have.
You should. You should. Because, you know, you grew up in the Elvis era.
Well, yeah. I was played in a high school band, and Joe Begley was our singer, and he sang Elvis, and he kind of looked like Elvis, although
yeah.
He's about a foot shorter. But he also worked at the railroad and was stationed in Memphis for a while. Went to Graceland many times. He said something else.
Yeah. Now, were you an Elvis fan?
Oh, yeah. We liked that music.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You bet.
But you've never toured the mansion. It was
never
fun.
Have.
Well, we toured not only the mansion, but they've got Elvis's plane right across the street where you can tour the plane.
Uh-huh.
And the only custom plane I ever remember being on was years ago was the governor's plane.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it was somewhat customized on the interior. But to me, I really wanted to go through that plane just to see what you could do with the body of a 727 or whatever this plane was.
Oh, it was that big.
And 727? Yeah, yeah. It was a big one. I don't know, 707, 7 something or other. And just to see what a rock star would do with the interior of a plane. And that was kind of cool. You know, just to see how the other half truly lives. And touring Graceland. Graceland, you know, I've heard so many stories about Graceland that it was a little on the tacky side.
Yeah.
Well, it was, kind of. But,
well,
you know, if you remember the 70s decade.
I was going to say 30 years old.
Yeah, and the 70s. That
he
was a tacky decade.
77.
Yeah. But the 70s was a tacky decade. If you remember the dress codes and
the leisure suits, yeah.
Yeah, the leisure suits and the shag carpet and the lava lamps and those god-awful ugly sideburns. And that's when into the long-haired look, which I never understood the hippie look. But, I mean, it was just a tacky-looking decade. So, yeah, the house by our standards today would have been considered tacky.
Yeah.
But in the 70s, it probably was somewhat in the mainstream.
I know a lot of people just love to go there and pay homage to Elvis, just to say that that's an important thing to do.
So yeah, yeah.
I've not really been interested. I think probably because it would be perceived as being tacky and not not something that I'd like to live in or pay any attention to.
Yeah. I guess it wasn't so much as paying homage, and I liked Elvis's music. I wasn't a huge fan, but I liked his music. But I just wanted to see how he lived back then, just the whole lifestyle experience.
Yeah.
And the one thing that surprised me, they had, I don't know, probably 25, 30 employees on the mansion grounds while
really?
We were there
wow.
and across the street. A lot of employees, all black, not one white face. That was an employee of Graceland. And which I didn't like because we had several questions. And there was nobody there that really gave a rat's foo-foo about Elvis. They looked at this as a job. But if you remember back in the 60s and 70s at an Elvis concert, I don't know whether you ever saw Elvis in person. I did once.
I never did.
But if you remember the footage, I don't think you ever saw a black face in the crowd. You know, Elvis appealed to white middle America. You know, that was his audience.
Well, yeah, he was doing black music, but appealing to white audiences. And,
yeah.
And that's... That was one of his appeals and one of his attractions.
Yeah. He wasn't looking for that crossover audience. I mean, he was.
No, but
he was a middle American, you know, Anglo-Saxon, Caucasian American. He was kind of, you know, the 60s version of Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra appealed to basically an all-white audience. Well, the point being, you know, having all black employees working for an entertainer, a superstar, that appealed to all white audiences, you don't have that connectivity. We didn't run across an employee at Graceland that really had that passion about being in Graceland because they were an Elvis fan. They recognized, you know, what Elvis meant to America, or white America, I should
certainly
say.
Certainly to Memphis.
Yeah, it would be like having somebody from the LDS Church give a tour of James Brown's home. You know, there would be no connectivity there.
I expect. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. And I guess I was surprised. Yet, that's the one thing I would have done differently. I would have had, you know, there's so many Elvis fan clubs still in business throughout the world. In fact, you know, around the mausoleum, or, you know, where he's buried, his father's buried, and his mother and his grandmother, I think there's actually five grave sites.
Didn't he have a twin brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And there's five of them, you know, on the grave site that actually is on the Graceland grounds.
Uh-huh.
The flowers that are still sent to Elvis 32 years later on a daily basis. We walked from here, I'm going to say it was a 50-yard walk from the burial, where everybody's buried, you know, the burial grounds, out to the gate. It was lined with flowers on both sides.
Huh.
People are still sending flowers.
Interesting.
On a daily or a weekly basis. And they'll keep the flowers up as long as they look good. And Graceland is encouraging, you know, Elvis fans to send flowers because it is kind of attractive. And but we saw a fan club flowers from Italy, Great Britain, New Zealand, I mean, all over the world. 32 years later, Elvis is still getting flowers.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. So,
well,
at any rate, there's enough dedicated, passionate people out there that they could hire.
Yeah.
Basically, to be there to answer questions, just to give a little added touch to this Graceland tour. Somebody that's really passionate about their job.
Every now and then, somebody will do a rundown in terms of which deceased stars' estates are making the most money. And Elvis is always in the top 10, perhaps the top 5, and been dead 32 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, John Wayne has been dead about the same amount of time, and his movies are on TV more than anybody else's. But Elvis, it's been a phenomenon, no question. How many years ago was it that they thought Elvis was coming back? They said he would show up, and he's still alive. I think it was the 25th anniversary of his death. Would you have been, what, 92?
Sacking groceries in Kalamazoo, Michigan?
Something,
yeah.
All of that. And somebody said, well, you know, there's always an Elvis sighting. They see somebody and they say, that's Elvis. They say, wait a minute. If you saw Elvis, he's 75 years old. He's not looking like the guy in the white leathers. And there was another guy, my friend Joe, who was in Memphis, was in a Dunkin' Donuts one time. When somebody there said, well, you know, Elvis is coming back. We know he's still alive, and he's coming back. And another guy sitting at the Dunkin' Donuts says, well, I tell you what, guys, if he's coming back, I got to tell you, I'm the mortician that did him. If he's coming back, he's walking real stiff.
I don't know. Anyway.
But it is a phenomenon, and
you know, the crowds are building down there.
Are they?
You would think 32 years later, everybody had gone through the house. Well, you haven't.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you're not a huge Elvis fan, and it was the first time we had ever been through Graceland. But you would think within 32 years after his death, everybody that cared anything about Elvis Presley, either curiosity aspect.
Would have been there, yeah.
Fandoms, what, the whole nine yards.
There's some people who go back there every year.
Yeah.
Just because the memories of Elvis. You know.
Yeah.
There's a an experimental, what is it called, in Seattle. Paul, what's Paul's last name? Bill Gates' partner, who got out of Microsoft early and with $12 billion or something, created the Electric Music Project, I believe it's called, at the Seattle Center site. And you go through it, and it's all kinds of jazz and rock and roll, history of music kinds of things. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's there is a rhythm and blues section where there is the lady who recorded the first Hound Dog.
Oh, Mama Thornton, Willie Mae Thornton, I believe.
Black
her
woman,
name.
yes. And, you know, and I suspect that some of the folks working at Graceland are kind of bored with the whole thing about Elvis, but some of it is probably that Elvis got credit for an awful lot of black music. And the fact that was that the black musicians couldn't get played on major radio stations. And Elvis came along in the 50s, and they said, guy sounds black, but he's white. Now we can play him. Or something like that. Yeah, however that whole thing went down at that time. But it was, there's no question, it was part of the Jim Crow ethic that existed in this country at the time, the culture.
Yeah. But I think it points out, you know, I left Graceland with the feeling that if you're hiring somebody for a job, hire somebody that's going to be enthusiastic about their job.
True.
Yeah.
They used to say about Disneyland that one of the things that the employees at Disney did is they all worked like a two-hour shift out in public. And then the another 2 hours they would work down doing maintenance underneath in the tower, in the tunnels and things like that. Then come back up in front of the public. And every time they'd come before the public, they'd say, okay, guys, it's showtime. You're on.
Mm-hmm.
Every employee, whether you're sweeping or whatever, you're on. You're entertaining. You're smiling. You're having a good time. And you're giving a good time because you're part of the show here. And you know, I think the guys at Graceland ought to be the same thing. You know, I don't know exactly how you do that at Graceland, but I think you're making a good point. It would be a good thing for them to do.
Yeah. Connectivity.
Yeah.
And
but Elvis' music was good, Jim. In 1960, I believe it was, I was in California. That's why I think I knew I was there at the time working a summer job. He came out with It's Now or Never, that particular song. And I'd only heard that sung by operatic tenors before that, as I recall. And I heard him sing that, and I said, my goodness, he's proven that he's got a voice. And his voice had tremendously, his singing ability had tremendously increased from Blue Suede Shoes and You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog in 53, 4, whatever it was, something like that. Significantly different. And he was country. He added the black sound to country music, and that's largely what made rock and roll work. Even though I still think Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock was the first rock and roll song.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We saw the original Comets,
Did you really?
Comets 2 years ago in Branson. Now, were the original Comets.
Bill's been gone quite a while, but the Comets were there.
Yeah, Bill Haley's been dead for, oh my gosh, I'm going to say 20 years, maybe 25. And I ended up a very, very reclusive individual and had some mental challenges.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know what paranoia, what have you, but he had some mental challenges and became a recluse.
Well, anybody put a little curl on his hair.
Well, he was as surprised as anybody by his overnight stardom.
Was he?
And, of course, he attained overnight stardom as a result of the movie Blackboard Jungle.
Sure.
Glenn Ford.
You bet.
And that was Rock
Around
the Clock.
Sidney Poitier, Glenn Ford, and I think Vic Morrow was in that.
I believe he was.
He was one
of the hoodlums. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was one of the toughies. And Rock Around the Clock, that's what started it all.
It was a big deal for me in junior high, high school, whatever year it came out, 52, 3, 4, someplace in there.
Yeah.
It was a...
Well, I remember going to Branson a couple of years ago, and some friends of ours had seen the original Comets. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a group that was big back in 52, 53,
sure.
54.
Sure.
These people are old. And some friends of ours in Vegas said, if the Comets are ever in the Midwest, you've got to catch them.
Really?
It's an unbelievable act. So, I mean, I can't imagine. I couldn't imagine.
They didn't need
money.
Bill Haley. Didn't need Bill.
No,
Haley
they had the Bill Haley sounded like.
Yeah.
And the three of these guys were originals. Were with him, you know, when Bill Haley recorded Rock Around the Clock. And I couldn't imagine somebody 82 years old being entertaining as a rocker.
Yeah.
The energy level of these three individuals was amazing. The drummer went into a good 5-6 minute drum solo.
While the other guys were catching their breath. As an old drummer, I appreciate that.
Well, one of the guys, one of the Comets died last winter. So now there's two of the original Comets left. But folks, if you ever have a chance, again, you're talking about 82, 83 year old people that have the energy of a 25-year-old on stage. It's
rocking
an amazing
it
show. It is absolutely an incredibly amazing show.
Yeah,
take advantage of it. Never saw Bill Haley.
No.
But Bill Haley was 4 or 5 years, and his day in the sun had come and gone. And Bill Haley was not what you would call, didn't have the teen idol good looks. Bill Haley was middle-aged when all of this hit because he was kind of an obscure country-western singer. In fact, his original group was called Bill Haley and the Saddlemen.
Really?
Yeah, and he started off as a country western entertainer.
Huh.
And then kind of got into the rockabilly music.
Discovered drum set.
Yeah.
And said, hey, we can add drums and we can make something out of this. And saxophone.
Yeah, yeah. And did they ever? Wow. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Well, enough of that. Sure. Let's talk about what happened in Topeka this week.
Kind of eventful.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, John, I know last week when you were on the show, we both said we'll never talk about helicopters again on the air. But, you know, I was catching up on my reading last night when I got home, and the headlines for 4 days straight, the Capital Journal, helicopters.
Yeah.
Back on the front page again today.
I see that. Saw that this morning. Yeah.
Were you surprised at the vote?
Oh,
to kill the program. And again, folks, for those of you that missed it, and I can't imagine anybody listening this morning that missed this story, but the helicopter program, the last stake in the heart of the helicopter program, I think we've driven the last stake in the heart of this.
I don't know. the helicopter program.
So.
Once you have a program that's been around for 38 years, I think the paper said this morning, you know, it has a lot of support in the police department. And the chief has given it very strong support. And it is somewhat of a problem for me, Jim. If you hire a police chief and you say, we want you to come in here and run this department and reduce crime and keep everything together and do a bunch of important things, and then you say, the tools that you think you need, we're not going to give you. It's pretty hard. He thinks he needs the helicopter, and they also cut a number of employees out of the budget. And I haven't seen that reported how many were cut, but it was, I think it was everybody that was vacant. And that was reported at one point a few weeks ago as 25 employees. That's, in my mind, a little bit problematic. Can you really run a police department and do what you want to do with 25 less employees, fewer employees? And if you don't need the helicopter, really? Can you, if Chief says you do need the helicopter, can we do without it? Harmon's compromise vote, which would allow the one helicopter to keep running, I was surprised failed. That would have been a nice out for everybody. But, in terms of the vote, Jim, I don't know if I was predicting that it would go down or be supported. And it was a 7-3 vote?
7-3 vote.
That kind of surprises me that it was that strong. But you know, there's a lot of talk out there about it. Do we want this helicopter or not?
You know, one of the things I found encouraging that happened apparently Monday night, you know, when they were running the straw poll, and which enabled our city council to conduct an hour and 40-minute meeting.
Right.
You know, dealing with the budget issues, was the fact that, again, it appears that we're long past, you know, a gang of five, a gang of four, what have you. The votes were all over the board again. which I find to be healthy as can be, because, again, taking a look at the votes to kill the helicopter program, you had Mayor Bunton, Karen Hiller, John Alcala, Sylvia Ortiz, Larry Walgest, Bob Archer, and Richard Harmon. They voted to kill the helicopter program,
right.
Which means you had Jack Wolfel, Deborah Swank, and Jeff Prisner. They were the dissenters. They said that they voted to continue the program. Mm-hmm. But if then you go on to take a look at reducing the mill levy, and we're actually going to experience a slight mill levy reduction in the city as far as the city budget goes. TMTA gets into
county,
another matter.
County and TMTA managed to eat that up. But
yeah. Yes, they did. But governing body members then voted 7-3 with Jack Wolfel, Richard Harmon, and Sylvia Ortiz dissenting to approve a 2010 budget that basically would cut the mill levy by one-tenth of a mill. So, again, we don't see these personality alignments with this city council, which I think is just healthy as healthy can be.
So far, at least, yeah.
So far, right. So good.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I agree with you. I don't know if the gang of four or five actually existed, but it was... It appeared to have existed, and that's as bad as existing.
Yeah, personalities were certainly coming into play, I think, with our two previous city council, and that's not healthy. But this group, they, again, have demonstrated so far, knock on wood, the ability to agree to disagree, and I hope that continues. John Arnold,
I wish
I wouldn't have said that. Boy, I'll tell you, there's two individuals... that made a couple of public statements, and I would think if they had it to do over again, maybe they wouldn't have been quite as strong in their statements as they were, or maybe just would have kept their mouth shut. One would be Officer Patrick Salmon. Now, he is the police officer that's in charge of the Friends of Police.
Right.
And Officer Salmon on Wednesday accused Mayor Bunton of seeking retribution and council members Hiller, Harmon, and Walgest of deception after they were amongst the seven members of the Topeka governing body who voted to end the police helicopter program.
Right.
A little sour grapes on Officer Salmon's part.
Yeah.
He might have burnt a bridge.
Well, the police, the Friends of the Police often overreach just a touch. And... I shouldn't say often, but occasionally do. And I think in that particular case, Officer Salmon did. Probably shouldn't have said either that retribution existed or... what was the other comment?
Deception.
Deception, yeah.
Accused the mayor of retribution, and basically what Officer Salmon was saying, that the Friends of Police endorsed Jeff Prisner.
Right.
And he's running for mayor. And Jeff Prisner, of course, was running against the incumbent, Mayor Bill Button. The Friends of Police did endorse Hiller and Harmon and Walgest, and all three of these individuals voted no on the helicopter. But I contend that a no vote on the helicopter is not a no vote on law enforcement.
Oh, no.
I think we're mixing apples and oranges there. But
well, I thought Tim Frencher did a good job with this article because he went back and he went to Harmon, and he went to Hiller, and he went to Prisner and said, what do you think? This is what the PAC is saying. And Hiller says, I said I'd listen, and I did listen. Harmon said I was for it, and I tried to do a compromise vote that would allow us to keep the system flying. It didn't pass. When you read the handwriting on the wall, 7-3, it was pretty clear he was one of the seven, but it would have been 6-4, so what the heck? You know, might as well go with the flow if you can see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
And he quoted, what was the deal?
Larry Walgest said, I'm just not going to comment on this. And,
yeah.
He should.
And Prisner didn't do it. They didn't talk to him. They just talked to Bill Button. He said, no, that's ridiculous. There's no retribution. I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah, because Bill Button carried 64% of the vote.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Didn't mean much.
No. Now, I think politically, Officer Salmon possibly shouldn't have said what he said. Politically, not good. No.
Well, there's two or three people in the paper today that shouldn't have said what they said.
Well, a couple of days ago, let's talk about one of those other individuals in a couple of minutes, but a few days ago, City Councilwoman Deborah Swank, a little upset as a result of the helicopter vote, and Deborah Swank apparently made the statement that Mayor Button was talking about the fact that he was besieged with requests to vote no on the helicopter.
Yeah.
That's what the mayor was hearing all over the city of Topeka, vote no on the helicopter. But Deborah Swank responded by saying, well, if you talk to people who don't read the Capital Journal or listen to talk radio, well, they're very supportive of the helicopter program.
Yeah.
So basically she was saying that if you're talking to people who are uninformed and don't read the daily newspaper, the Capital Journal, they're supportive of the program. I don't know. It's just the way that she phrased the question. Talking about, you know, this uninformed electorate that unfortunately is out there, that has an opinion on everything, that hasn't taken any time whatsoever to really delve into the issue.
Well,
the meat of the issue. And I think it was just a rather ignorant statement on her part.
On the other hand, to assume that you have to read the Cap Journal or listen to talk radio, present company accepted, to be informed is probably wrong. I mean, you can be informed in lots of other ways. Talk to people. And
well, of course, you can read your column in the Metro News.
There you go. There you go.
But getting your news off of TV, with all due respect,
oh.
And we have TV 49, we have
sure.
TV 13 that are on this show once every 3 weeks. They're part of our media roundtable. Great people. But TV... if you're getting all of your news content off of TV, folks, you're missing a lot of news.
20-second soundbite.
That's what you're getting off of TV. I mean, they're highlighting the top stories of the day.
Yeah.
Highlighting.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all they can do by virtue of the nature of the beast.
And so often, they're reading the newspaper also and quoting the stories from the newspaper.
Sure.
And, you know, it's the whole news media business is feeding each other. To a certain extent,
yeah. But the newspaper, a community's local newspaper, this is the cornerstone.
Sure.
I mean, this is it. You know, as far as in-depth coverage of stories,
mm-hmm.
It's got to come from your local newspaper.
Yeah,
talk radio is not the answer. Now, talk radio, we're an entertainment medium. And, you know, listeners, people listening to our show today, they're learning something. They tune in because they want to be entertained. But the primary reason people tune in to talk radio is A, for entertainment, and two, for content. But talk radio, it's a little different view of the news because you are going to get strong editorial content when you tune in to talk radio.
Sure.
But most talk radio hosts, you know, if in fact they have a strong opinion, they're going to have facts to back their opinion up. Now, you don't have to agree with those facts because... But the point being, you will learn something by tuning in to talk radio. People tuning into this show don't learn anything from me, but I have guests on 2 hours a day. And
well,
my guests always come on this show well-informed. And if they have an opinion, they've got the facts to back up their opinion. So
I don't know, Jim. but no, I know your point. It's a good point. People try to be informed when they come on. You just had Representative Joe Patton on, and he had done his homework, had good notes, and went right down the line talking about the issue that he was talking about, health insurance. And also, when you look at the Cap Journal, you have a City Hall reporter in Tim Hrincher who sits there doing all those meetings, taking notes and trying to write stories down that make sense, and they're generally very good. You've got Rick Anderson, who is the Director of Commentary, is that his title in the newspaper, who helps to get the editorial page out, I'm sure, and does his own column and writes about issues. And I don't know, somebody said, was it Deborah Swank who said that Rick Anderson was the one who was campaigning against the helicopter? Some one of the council members said that, and I didn't recall that Rick was the one doing that. But
Rick had a column a week and a half ago, I believe, and, you know, the editorials in the Cap Journal. The Cap Journal has never been supportive of the helicopter.
No.
Because, and again, the editorial today touched on that. We simply don't have the money. This is a luxury item. And right now, you know, in today's economic environment, we don't have the money for luxuries. Now, the county does, with their little league ball diamonds and their soccer fields and their artificial turf and what have you. But at most levels of government, we simply don't have the resources available for luxury items. So I think the Capital Journal's been very responsible, you know, on the reporting on this helicopter. But Rick Anderson did have some strong editorial content in his column a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago.
It'll be interesting to see how the police department responds, the chief and the personnel in the department respond to not having the helicopter authorized, whether they figure out how to assign people to cover or whether they get the highway department or the state police to cover or what. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, I hope Chief Miller doesn't make the mistake of coming up with some way to circumvent the system again. We've been through that with Brett Blackburn, our city manager, Norton Bonaparte, and Chief Miller, when they went behind closed doors and came up and concocted what they called a communication vehicle, basically to circumvent the traditional process of passing an ordinance. Absolutely, totally wrong. And that is when the Capital Journal absolutely jumped down all three of the throats, if you remember.
Yes,
correctly. And should have. And absolutely should have. That was inexcusable behavior on all three of their parts. So,
well, the other thing is that about 4 years ago, the city spent $125,000 hiring a consulting firm named Management Partners, which came in and took a look at a variety of things, I think everything but the fire department in the city, and came up with something like 234 recommendations that they estimated would save $4 to $5 million a year. The city hasn't implemented very many of those recommendations. One of them was to do away with the helicopter program and put officers in other places of higher crime. And I think there are about 14 officers in that unit. And that hadn't been done before. Now, some, maybe it will get done. Maybe it will make a difference. I don't know.
Hey, by the way, jim.cates@cjonline.com. If you want to email a question in, or you can always call us at 295-1150. We just heard from a good friend, Dwayne Rain. Do you remember Dwayne Rain?
Yes.
Former chairman of the Shawnee County Republican Party.
Yes.
Regular listener of the show. Recently moved to Texas.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Hated to lose Dwayne. And but just got an email from Dwayne. It says, "Hi, Jim. Enjoyed listening to the gentleman from Canada this morning. Joe Patton did a great job of representing the party. Keep up the good shows. Today I will be a registered voter in Texas when I get my driver's license. In order to get a driver's license, you must have your birth certificate and a Social Security card along with your current driver's license to get a Texas license when moving into the state. It is strange down here. When you register to vote, you cannot declare a party affiliation. It looks like the voter files do not identify your party affiliation." Huh. I guess Texas would be an open primary state then?
Well, I didn't know that. When I lived there 30 years ago, it wasn't, but I was only there for a couple of years. It was a party state, and, you know, I registered there as a Democrat because the primary was where all the decisions were made. It's like when I was in Kansas, I would register as a Republican because that's where all the decisions were made at the primary. In North Dakota, it was an open state. You could cross over. They said North Dakotans aren't smart enough to steal an election. So. To conspire.
I wonder if that means then when you go to vote on primary election day, that's when you declare a party?
I guess you'd have to, unless you handed a ballot that has both and you can vote any place you want.
Huh.
I don't know about that.
That is rather unique.
Yeah, Texas does some funny things.
Hey, folks, I want to give my son's website a plug because he's done a lot of work on this and does it just for the sheer joy of doing it. If you haven't checked it out, themismag.com. Check it out. T-H-E-M-I-S. Themis, which is Greek for the truth, is what that means. Themismag.com. And his recent column deals with voter fraud. In fact, Texas is mentioned in his most recent time.
Good. I'll have to go check that out.
Yeah. It's a good website. He's done a nice job with it. Okay. John Arnold's with me. Let's take a break. We're talking about the top stories of the week. And if there's something that you want us to discuss, you can email us, jim.cates@cjonline.com, or you can give us a call at 295-1150. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today. 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back with John Arnold. And again, we're talking about the top stories of the week. You were talking about Alan Colmes. You know, one of the few successful left-of-center talk show hosts.
Yeah. Well, as I've listened to him late at night as I'm driving home, that he seems fairly reasonable. But the people who call in sometimes are just really bizarre, and he's pretty short with them. He cuts them off very quickly if they say something that's stupid or not true.
You know, frankly, I'm surprised that left-of-center liberal talk radio hasn't caught on. And again, most Americans view themselves as right-of-center. And I think you were walking in as I was talking about something that was on Kansas Liberty. KansasLiberty.com. This is a right-of-center conservative newspaper, internet newspaper, and it's a pretty good one. Well, they had a column, it goes back to August the 14th, when was that, last Friday? Whatever.
Yes.
And it was talking about the political alliance of Republican moderates and Democrats that's the key to liberal successes, because most Americans, again, view themselves as conservative. When asked the question, do you view yourself as a conservative, moderate, or liberal? Conservatives. That's where most Americans say they are. Well, Democrats have the significant party identification advantage in more than 30 states now. Republicans have a significant registration advantage in only four states. but most Americans view themselves as conservatives. And there's only three states in the country where, if asked, residents of Hawaii, Vermont, and Massachusetts, all three of these states, pretty evenly divided as far as the number of residents in Vermont, for example, that view themselves as liberal versus conservative. Huh. Pretty even mix in those three states. Every other state, conservatives outnumber liberals by statistically significant margins in 47 of our 50 states.
That applies also to Washington and Oregon?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes. Yeah. In Washington and Oregon, more Oregonians, Washingtonians, whatever they call themselves, are going to view themselves as conservative versus liberal. Yeah.
Okay.
Only three states. Now, this is a Gallup poll.
Sure.
So, this isn't some right-of-center poll that was conducted. This is a Gallup poll. Interesting as can be, but the point they were trying to make, it's very difficult to determine party affiliations if you're taking a look at the governing bodies of these 47 states.
Mm-hmm.
To where the voters view themselves as conservatives. Again, you could cover up the names of these 47 states because you're going to find these states are all over the board as far as both houses of the legislature controlled by the Democrats, maybe one house by the Republicans, the other by the Democrats. There's a few states to where the Republicans control both bodies. By covering up the name of the states, if you're taking a look at traditional conservative issues, you can't tell the Republicans from the Democrats.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting to me because there's so many Republicans candidates that run on the traditional Republican platform once elected. Something happens to them and, you know, the traditional Republican conservative views, if you will, go out the window and now they align themselves with the Democrats and we end up with left of center legislation. Interesting study in human nature. I don't know why it is that if most Americans view themselves as conservatives, why not run for election as a conservative? Once elected, why not stick to those conservative guns and stick to those conservative principles?
I wonder, Jim, if it's because maybe the definition of conservative is significantly different from individual to individual. I think of conservative as being fiscally responsible. That means to me you don't spend money you don't have. You pay your own way. You tax as much as you spend. And that's what fiscally conservative is, fiscally responsible. You're paying your own way, not pushing it off to the next generation or somebody else. Then you say, okay, what else does that go with? And you say, well, gee, I guess that means that you support the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and limited government to a certain extent. Well, limited government has changed significantly the past 50 years, 75, 100, something like that. What is limited government? And I'd really be interested in seeing a conservative manifesto or something like that that says, okay, this is what you need to believe in if you're going to be a conservative. Forget the whole argument on right to life, abortion, that whole thing, because that divides everybody religiously and politically and political party partisanly and consciously in their own conscience, that's the word I'm looking for. And then there's a few other issues, you know, like affirmative action, racial equality, the big issue that's been our bugaboo for 250 years. Big deal. I'd like to see just exactly what a conservative philosophy is.
And while you were talking about that, I was just reading what I pulled off of the Kansas Liberty site on the definition of a conservative and John Arnold.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it doesn't say. But you've got a good point because, again, when I say I'm a conservative, mm-hmm. in my mind I'm thinking about limited government.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not thinking about abortion. I'm not thinking about the social issues.
Yeah.
But again, if you're talking to somebody possibly that's at the younger age, younger end of the baby boomer movement, when they hear the word conservative, they're thinking something entirely different than Barry Goldwater's definition. Now, I cut my teeth on Barry Goldwater conservatism.
I'd like to go back and reread that book, The Conscience of a Conservative. Yep, I read it in the early 60s.
Yeah, you would be reading today The Conscience of a Libertarian, because Barry Goldwater, by today's definition, would not be a conservative, would be a libertarian. Well, I suppose he would be still considered a conservative, but certainly more of the Ron Paul vein than he would be of the Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell wing of the party. You know, Ron Paul, I think, is the classic libertarian, and I think if Barry Goldwater were alive today and serving in Congress, Barry Goldwater would be a classic libertarian.
Huh. Interesting. You mentioned Pat Robertson. That's funny. A few years ago, about 20, he decided he wanted to run for president. And he said something about having a call to run for president. And just this past week, this congresswoman from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann, I believe is her name, said that she might run for president, but to do so, she'd have to get a message from God that asked her to do so. And both of them reminded me of the story about Pat Robertson that said, yes, I was out there plowing my field one day, and I took a break, and I looked up at the clouds. It was a hot day, and I looked at the clouds, and the clouds said, I could see it just as plain as day. It said, go run for president. Go pee. G-P. He says, well, are you sure that meant go for president? Maybe it went go back to plowing.
I still have a picture on my office wall, me and Pat Robertson, arm in arm. This was the 1988 Republican National Convention, and that's back when Bob Dole was running for president, which means the Kansas delegation, we were front and center. We had the best seats in the House. Which always happens if you're from the state that has a viable candidate running for national office. You have the best seats in the House, which we happen to have that year in New Orleans. Pat Robertson was the speaker, and this was early on in the convention, and a great speaker. Pat Robertson's a very charismatic individual. He was coming off of the podium, coming down the center aisle, which means he was walking right by the Kansas delegation, and he sees me. And I don't know who I look like, but I must have a look-alike out there somewhere, because Pat came up and said, hi, how are you doing? I haven't seen you. It's been how many years? And I said, well, Pat, I don't remember the last time we were together, but let me introduce you to the Kansas delegation. So I'm taking Pat over and introducing Pat to Governor Hayden and the rest of the Kansas delegation, yeah. And we're both waving at our 80 Kansas delegates, and it was Pat Robertson and I arm in arm. And he walked off and he said, it's so good to see you. Next time you're in Virginia, you've got to call. We've got to get together. Pat, I'll do that. Now, who he thought I was, I have not a clue. But that's my Pat Robertson story.
That's a good story.
Yeah, I still got a picture of Pat and I hanging out.
You haven't been to Virginia yet to give him a call.
I have not been to Virginia to follow that up. I haven't had the opportunity to talk to Mr. Robertson. Hey, we've got about 10 minutes to go. John, the big story of the week in your eyes. Now, again, I've been gone all week. Helicopter was the one that just intrigued me because, again, four more days of the helicopter debate, and this one it's over, it appears.
Yeah, I suppose that's a sub-story to the big issue, which is the budget, city and county. Yeah. Dick Miller continues his little thing of not suffering fools lightly, I guess you would say, or I don't know exactly. He's his own thing. In fact, I wrote my column in the Topeka Metro News at this time about basically intemperate leaders, you know, saying things like Nazis and racists, and quoting Vic saying, I'm going to get even with Mort Norton for bringing over his thing. You know, we don't need that kind of, we need people talking about public policy from the standpoint of what makes sense. Not calling names and yelling at each other, whether it's at the town hall or sitting in the county offices, you know. Calling somebody a devil, you know, that's not appropriate.
Yeah. Front page of the paper. Topeka official catches hell. Frustrated Vic Miller calls Councilman Prisner the devil. You know, we're right back to where we were 2-3 years ago in this community, to where we're playing I Gotcha again.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this conflict between the city and the county, will it ever end?
Yeah, I agree. And I started off my column this week saying, look, it's not only important to win, it's important to make sure the opponent looks like he lost. And I said, now that sounds like some kind of a phrase that a James Carville would say from the Democratic side, or a Karl Rove from the Republican side. Not just win, but make sure the other guy looks like he lost. And that spawns all kinds of negative crap being thrown out there, you know, and I just think it's wrong. I think we need better. That's basically what I was trying to say.
Good for you. You know, so many times in politics, elected officials forget that your enemy today could end up being your best friend tomorrow because the issues constantly are changing.
Exactly right. Yep.
Why burn that political bridge?
As you showed with the legislators from all the different states, there has to be a lot of that moving towards the center to make them all look the same. Has to be. You know, from the liberals and conservatives moving together, looking the same when you compare them for their voting rights.
Well, and I appreciate Jeff Reisner and I are not going to agree politically on many issues. I like Jeff personally, but Jeff is to the left of me on virtually everything. But I like and respect Jeff. And I was glad to see that Jeff Reisner didn't rise to the bait of Vic Miller, you know, to keep this dialogue going, so to speak.
That's a good point. I think that's a very good point. Yeah. But you raise another question, Jim, and that is, name me somebody who isn't to the left of you.
I'm trying to think who that
who
would
that
be.
Might
who
be. That Pat be? Robertson, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. I don't know. Pat,
who, Dave?
Senator Heelskamp.
Okay.
That would be one. Yes. Very good legislator. John, we're just about out of time. I appreciate you coming in, as always. We will see you next Friday in your column. This Friday in the Metro News, again, is?
Oh, that we need better politicians, better political leadership, not calling names and fussing about things, but reasoning with each other and figuring things out. As you say, you might be a bedfellow with them the next day.
Absolutely.
And we ought to be.
Metro News, 232-8600, if you want to subscribe to the Metro News.
Absolutely.
Now, if you want to purchase a copy of the Metro News, it's now subscription only.
Yes.
232-8600, or you can buy it at the Downtowner Restaurant.
Or McFarland's Restaurant, yes.
Or McFarland's.
Either one, Engage Center, yep.
All right. We will see you next Friday, and John, with you, will be a
very
representative of TV 49.
Very good, Jim. Thank you very much.
All right. Dave Jackson, immediately following the news, folks, we're going to spend an hour talking about gardening, lawn tips, the whole nine yards coming up. And Trish Johnston and the news. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Here's just a look at news you can read in more detail in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. In the pre-dawn hours Thursday, tragedy mixed with a miracle, a case of life and death. Two women were fatally shot at a mobile home in southeast Topeka. Whoever was responsible left before harming one of the victim's young children. Leah Schmuck, 28, and Walia Tyndale, 29, were found dead just after 7 a.m. in the mobile home they shared at 1223 Southeast 41st Terrace. Said Topeka police, police said the family member found the women, as well as the 6-year-old daughter of one of the victims. The child wasn't injured during the incident, which he said is being investigated as a double homicide. The city of Topeka plans to add one line to an electronic vote board in the council chambers to include the mayor. The move is expected to enable those in the chamber to see how the mayor has voted electronically, as opposed to the current practice of waiting for the mayor to announce his or her vote. Officials expect the move will enable the votes of all 10 governing body members to be made public at the same time. Waste Management and Westar Energy took one step closer Thursday morning to the completion of building a landfill gas-to-energy facility at the Rolling Meadows landfill. In 2007, Waste Management set a goal of developing up to 60 landfill gas-to-energy projects at its landfills by 2012. Plans for the Topeka facility began about 2 years ago. Mostly sunny and pleasant today and a high of 80. Mostly clear overnight and a low of 52. Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will return for another hour with Dave Jackson from Jackson's Greenhouse to answer all your lawn and garden questions.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. landscape planning and design. We listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka. 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back with Dave Jackson, as we are each and every Friday at 10 o'clock. Hey, Dave, before we talk about gardening, there's a Harley party that's coming up a week from tomorrow, August the 29th. Is that a week from Saturday? That's a week from Saturday. $30 a person, you can win a Harley Davidson. They've been doing this now for 10 years. And the proceeds go to help the Boys and Girls Club of Topeka. And they do a lot of good for a lot of kids, folks. 4,000 or 5,000 kids every summer. Well, every year are helped by the Boys and Girls Club of Topeka. So if you have an interest, you can contact Jeremiah Bullfrogs on Huntoon. Not the one on Fairlawn, or not the one on Wanamaker, rather, but the one on Huntoon. Capital Federal also is a sponsor. The Topeka Capital Journal, Peterson Publications, Johnny Carino's Security Benefit, and the list goes on and on. A great benefit for the Boys and Girls Club of Topeka. You got back in town last night?
We got back from Chicago.
You were in Chicago all week.
Right.
Well, we were in Memphis all
great
week.
Great time.
Yeah. What were you doing in Chicago?
The Independent Garden Center show is there. This is, if you own an independent garden center, then this is the one national show that you need to attend, because that's where all of the new product is displayed for next year. There were 28 aisles, each 100 yards long, full of plants, garden center materials, chemicals, seed, statuary, you name it.
How many vendors would that be?
Oh, there were well over, 1,200, I think, 1,200 or 1,500 vendors.
1,200 or 1,500 vendors.
Yes, it's huge. And of course, the Navy Pier, of course, is that piece of pier that extends out in Lake Michigan off of Michigan Avenue in East Chicago, or right on the east border of Chicago. Just a really great venue. Just really interesting. We went online and found a room at what's called West Chicago Lakeshore. It's just known as the W. It's a refurbished hotel and had rooms overlooking on the 27th floor overlooking Lake Michigan. Found them for cheap, $100 a night instead of the $190 or $200 that they wanted at the Hyatt.
Oh, well, yeah.
And just a great time. Saw a lot of folks, of course, from other garden centers that we're familiar with that are Fertilome dealers from across the nation. And got to see Charlie Daniels Tuesday night.
Oh, you did?
Had seats on the fifth row and then got to walk up right to the stage, right front center, because it's a prettier, strained, older group. And then these people didn't, you know, very polite. And so you could, and you know, just what a phenomenal musician and band.
And politically somewhat right of center.
Yes, he was. There was a flag, of course, displayed behind him. Actually, it was displayed for the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
But this flag was probably 50 feet high and 200 feet long. That was the size of the stage, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, big American flag. And just a great experience.
Yeah, and great American.
He is. He really
great
is.
Patriotic American. How many independent garden centers are there? I'm going to guess 15,000 throughout the country. How many would there be?
Because this is
the big national conclave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that probably wouldn't be off far. 15, 20, 25,000, I suppose.
Could
I
be know. Up as high as 25,000.
It probably could. I mean, some of these
things. Night.
But, I mean, it's not a...
Well, every town of, what, 2,500 or more is going to have a garden center, I would think.
Well, it looks to me like independent garden centers with the... if. It in Kansas, it looks to me like it takes a town of more than 15,000.
15,000 would be your cutoff.
Probably. Great Bend has one, but like Norton doesn't, Oberlin doesn't. You know, those kinds of things.
I'm going back to my hometown when I grew up. I think we had two, maybe three garden centers.
Is that Liberty?
Uh-huh. 5,000, 6,000 people. But again, this was back in the early 60s.
This was pre-Walmart.
Got
a
point.
It makes a world of difference.
So today, roughly 15,000 would be the unofficial cutoff,
mm-hmm.
as far as it being economically feasible.
Right.
Okay. But that still is a ton of independent garden centers. Now, this is where you're going to see a lot of new products
mm-hmm.
that are going to surface.
Yeah.
What was the most remarkable, the thing that really sticks out?
To me, this
year is a new product that's going to be introduced in 2010, that's going to be rolled out in 2010.
There was a board that was kind of appointed that was supposed to pick that, but I think I missed that little bit of the thing when I was supposed to be sitting there listening to it. We had some other work to do, and I didn't hear what the most one was picked by the board. Now, for Annette and I, the one that we were really looking for people was a miniature kitchen waste composter that you can set right on your counter, your kitchen counter, and that absorbs odor, and that has a little insert that you can recycle your compost with. I mean, and gather it without making a mess, and without, you know, once a week or so, then whatever kitchen waste you've gathered in this composter, then that's on your thing, has made no odor all this time. But then you take it out and put it in the in your compost heap or pile, and it's in a biodegradable bag, so you never have to, once you put it in there, you never touch it. In other words, you pick that bag out of the composter and take it out there, and then it breaks down right along with your compost. I think that's pretty slick. And it has a charcoal filter thing on the top so that you don't...
Now, this is something that was unveiled this year for the first time?
We've been seeing it Our customers have been asking for it. Evidently, it's been on Home and Garden TV sometime. It started this year.
Okay.
It's a British product, actually, and that's where this will be coming from. And
retails for what?
Oh, under $15, $12.99, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it.
And that includes the first go around of your filters and your biodegradable bags.
And that's it.
That's it.
Good night.
But I mean, I think that's pretty slick. Because I'm into. I think that people should be composting, because that's the secret to your success in gardens is plenty of compost, and there's no point in.
Now these are on order. You and Annette have ordered
mm-hmm.
a supply of these, and they're going to be in timeline
mid-October, I think.
Mid-October, mm-hmm. you'll have. Well, we'll be talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure sometime in mid-October then,
mm-hmm.
but they're
yeah.
coming.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting.
It is.
Interesting.
So maybe for me, I guess that was the one. We really had to, we looked for that at the show. We came in hopefully to find that.
That was on your checklist of
that
things
was on
to
our
do.
Checklist.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things not on our checklist that we found was this kind of a post affair that will let you stack and grow pots. In other words, you'll be able to grow a columnar garden.
Kind
of
a garden?
Columnar.
Okay.
Right. And this thing makes a stand, and so you can multi-layer your pots.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of slick, really slick. I thought it was pretty slick. Something else that we'll be seeing at Jackson's? Yeah, a new look for patio gardens. Sure. Yeah, we'll have it.
Coming in around the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Or will this be more of a spring item?
Excuse me. I think that that's... I don't know whether we're going to have it in as a Christmas gift before Christmas or whether we decided to wait and have it new for the Flower Lawn and Garden Show in February. I kind of think that's going to be a late January arrival.
Okay.
And then Annette found a really high-quality gardener's apron. We've been looking for one that we could sell for under $25. That's heavy duty. That is a gardener's apron that the ladies don't have it hanging over their neck. That's lightweight. That is tough,
mm-hmm.
and that you can put your snippers in without the snippers poking a hole in your pocket. It's a pretty little slick apron that she found.
And those are on order.
Those are on order, yeah.
They're going to be in time for Christmas?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that could be a Christmas gift then.
Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff we had to actually leave our credit card and pay for, because these are vendors that aren't represented in the normal distribution chain. You know, we have our regular distributors
mm-hmm.
that we buy through, but the whole point of going to this Independent Garden Center show was to find and seek out products from outside our normal chain so that we could get some new kinds of things in that we think will make a gardener's life easier and more fun, that kind of thing.
What would be the most common item? You say there are 100 yards.
There were 28 aisles, each 100 yards long.
2,800 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Of inventory, of merchandise.
Right.
That's incredible.
It is.
What's the most common item that's displayed? Because, again, 2,800 yards.
Probably pottery. Probably.
Really?
I would think. I don't know. That's the one that... there was a lot of statuary there.
Mm-hmm.
And my Athens statuary company that we've recently started buying from was well represented there, and their product looked really good in comparison, and price-wise, in comparison to everything else that was offered there, it in my view, competed just as well and had a better price point than everything else that was there in terms of quality, colors, and selection.
Now you've been going to these for years.
Well, this is the first time. This is only the third year that this has ever been done.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This was a big void in the market. I mean, otherwise you would go to a hardware show, the National Hardware Show in Las Vegas, and concentrate on
this. This is only the third time this has been done?
Right.
And you're talking about 2,800 yards of vendors.
Mm-hmm.
And this is only the third time
this
has been done.
Yep.
Somebody's made a killing off of this over the past 3 years.
I think the guys have done well.
I think they've done extremely well. This has got to be one of the largest shows in the country.
For garden season, yeah, it is.
But 2,800 yards of merchandise for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Would have to put this on the top 10, I would think.
Yeah, that's a well over a mile and a half of walking.
Wow. Yeah,
and
I was going to...
Those are double loaded, I'm talking about. So, you know, you have one on one side and one on the other. So, it's actually double.
Now, have you been to all three of these shows?
No, this is our first time.
This is the first
time
we
signed up for the first one, the first show, two years ago, and weren't able to attend. Something came up, and we weren't able to get away. We just couldn't get away. And then last year we had a conflict. This year I said we're going to go. And so when they sent out the early invitation, and it's a show you have to pay to go to. It cost us about $150 or so a piece to attend.
Which is nothing, you know, in the big scheme of things.
Right.
With that much merchandise on display.
Right.
All of which pertains to your business.
Right.
Your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's incredible.
But it's the only show you have to pay to go to. But, of course, it's so much bigger, and it's the venue there is just perfect. Chicago's central. It's cheap to get to. You can pick up a round-trip airfare for $100, $120. And it doesn't have to take long. We were just there. We flew out Tuesday morning. We were talking before the plane left at 7 a.m., and we were there and on the floor at 11 a.m. You know, and at O'Hare, you fly into O'Hare, you catch the blue line into the Chicago for $2.25. And then if you've got the nerve enough to, and Chicago's a safe town now, but you can catch the bus then for 50 cents to the pier. And then check in. And then from our pier, we walk to the...
What surprised you the most about this whole experience?
Just
the sheer volume of inventory that was available, or what?
Yeah, I'd have to say the size of it. Because not only, I forgot, not only, it was oversold, so they had to open up a whole other hall with two more aisles that were actually another 150 yards long. I forgot about that. Just the sheer size, the number, the people there, and the friendliness of not only the vendors. Of course, they've got to be friendly. They're trying to sell, but the friendliness of the owners. No, it was everybody's polite. There's no jostling in lines and that kind of stuff. Anyway, the big surprise would be when you signed in, if you paid for that, you did get a free hot dog one day for lunch. but if you wanted a bag of chips, a little bag of 4 ounce bag of chips and a Pepsi in a 12 ounce can, that was $5.
Wow.
So we didn't want that, turns out. We took our own food and
now, were there any seminars, or was this just
there
a vendor conference?
I didn't even mention that. National seminars. There were keynote speakers in the morning before the show opened. The show opened at 10 on the floor, but there were keynote speakers at 8:30 or 9 o'clock that you would go to and attend. I mean, these are nationally known people, and there were speakers throughout the show. So if you didn't want to be on the floor or you had other people, then you would go to these shows. And we attended several of those as well while we were there, of some nationally renowned people. As a matter of fact, we made contact with one of them. Depending on how it works out in terms of a second store for us, we may have a consultant come in and that we heard come in for a day and consult with us on the establishment of a new garden center.
Good night. So this was everything you hoped it would be,
and more.
Plus some.
Yeah, plus some. Really was.
Yeah.
I mean, because it quite a place. Quite a place.
Anything at the seminars that's in the pipeline now that's going to revolutionize your business in 2010?
Oh, I don't know. We probably, if we can make it happen, we're going to look at some more consumer-friendly ways of displaying our products that we grow, our plant products mostly. We're going to try to completely reset our garden center again, our greenhouse, and but not so much our garden center, but the sales yards and stuff, make more, try to add to the beauty of it, try to make it easier to shop than it has been. And that will be our goal. I mean, we saw just literally hundreds of pictures in these seminars of places that are doing it right, you know, really doing well, that pop, that where they really pop. I mean, we do the best we can, but we come from the traditional grower side, where things are grown in long benches so that they're easy to grow and water. And while that's convenient for us, it's not particularly consumer friendly. We have to take a look more at the merchandising side of it, possibly, than the growing side. So we're excited.
Let's take a break.
That'd be a good idea. Yeah. We blew right on by there.
Dave Jackson with us, as he always is, between 10 and 11 on Friday. This is the hour where we talk about gardening, we talk about lawn care, we talk about it all. And, folks, again, if there's something that you want Dave to discuss, all you have to do is email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Or you can give us a call at 295-1150. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years. Serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go
the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back with Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. A lot to talk about today, as always. 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road and 232-3416, folks. Anytime that you've got a question on gardening, lawn care, the whole nine yards, you can give Jackson's a call 7 days a week, 232-3416, and there's going to be a professional that's going to answer the phone, and in all probability is going to be able to answer your question over the phone. So take advantage of it. Another great number to have written down. David, lots to talk about today, but let's get into some of the specials.
Right.
Your August specials.
Well, not so much special, but our fall plants for your fall gardens are ready. The cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, that all looks really good. The pansies are about ready to plant. It's been so cool and nice that folks, we've grown a really great looking group of pansies, and they're just now beginning to open some blooms. Of course, the garage sale goes on. We finish. We got what? Today's the 21st. We got 10 more days of garage sale. We got some really super bargains, super stuff. I mean, the 90% off. You're paying hardly anything on some of that stuff that's just been around too long that we try to clean up. And the koi to the end. What, to the 25th? We have our koi buy two get one free on sale, and plus, not only are these the koi that we have, we're getting a new shipment of 6 cases of new fresh fish on Monday, and some fish that we haven't had as well. That'll be an inexpensive fish. I don't know how to describe it until I see it. I don't even know what it is, but I got a box of 300 of those coming in Monday afternoon after the airplane gets here. I got to go to Kansas City and pick them up air freight. They come in to us from a little town about 150 miles west of Dallas, and they get them over to the airport Monday morning, and they fly out.
Something else you discovered at your conference in Chicago?
No, actually, we've been dealing with this guy. There was a fish vendor there, but our guy, turns out, has a lot better prices, so I checked the prices. I was able to at least do that and confirm that the guy I'm using is probably as good as there is in the Midwest.
So the fish you're bringing in, these are compatible with koi. The koi is not going to eat.
Right, right.
This new breed of fish.
They better be, because they're going to be in the same cotton tank. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we're bringing a new fish in that we haven't carried before. It's supposed to be kind of pretty. So anyway, that's exciting. What else do I have on sale here? I can't remember. We're still doing the recycling to the end of the month. Bring in your used plastic pots, and we'll give you $10 worth of annuals. We have got the greenhouses cleaned out now. Greenhouse, the east and the middle greenhouses, because the poinsettias get there today. Our baby poinsettias arrived today, so we've sterilized and cleaned and swept, and the two middle greenhouses are empty. The middle greenhouse and the east greenhouse are empty of any plants that have been swept up, sterilized, and ready for poinsettias. So that's another crop to begin with. And, of course, when we learned in the seminars, you're not supposed to have an empty greenhouse. Looks like we're going out of business, but we're growers, and that's where they grow, and that's what you got to do between crops is sterilize and clean everything out. So anyway.
Sterilize.
Yes.
What do you mean by sterilize? Of course, you're trying to get rid, I guess, of all the possible weed seeds or foreign seeds.
Right. Well, we're sterilizing in terms of not only seed, but fungal spores, algae, any of that stuff. There's a product, an organic product called Green Shield, that we literally just bathe the whole greenhouse in, that gets rid of anything, any carryover weeds, any seed, any of that kind of stuff, any algae, any spores, anything. It needs to be clean when we start. It's not operating room clean, but it's certainly cleaner than my my living room at home, probably.
Well, you know, speaking of fungus and what have you, mm-hmm. with the rains we've had this week. Now, you and I were both out of town this week,
mm-hmm.
but Topeka had a little bit of moisture.
Right.
We're going to see a little fungus, a little increase in fungus activity, aren't we?
Right, we are. We talked about that in the Annette's tip in the ad today. So, Wednesday. So, yeah, you need to be on the alert. I just keep getting more and more calls of people talking about the blight on their tomatoes and the mildew on their squash, all of those kinds of things that need to be addressed if you're going to finish your garden off in have a good fall garden, have continued production, all that kind of stuff. You need to be working with that right now. And it's cool and nice. It's not like you come home to step out of the door at work at 5 o'clock and it's 95 degrees and you think, oh, my God, I just got to get home, get set down in the patio or in the kitchen or something and have a beer and not go outdoors anymore. This is nice weather to work. And it's a great time to kick in your second season on your gardens. And to do that, you need to keep them a little bit clean in terms of fungus because, I mean, we've been blessed with the cool weather and the rain, but following right behind it.
That does bring some challenges with it.
Right, yeah. Bound to. I mean, there's challenges everywhere. I mean, depending on where you're at, what you do. The people in Florida have huge problems with insects that we don't have to worry about, but we have this huge problem with the combination of heat, or when it's not hot, then the fungus. So it's always something. There's always something.
Now, the product's called again?
The broad spectrum for your gardens, the broad Fertilome broad spectrum fungicide works just as good as anything. It's a chlorothalonil concentrate that is safe to use, absolutely safe. We also have the Fertilome triple action that's a neem oil product produced from the neem tree that has been found to have fungicidal properties as well if you're wanting to do a fungicide that is organic. So we have a whole range. Fertilome has several. If it's on ornamentals, of course, our Fertilome systemic fungicide will last longer and actually has a little bit better kick on most funguses. It's a new generation chemical, so that's really good to use as well if it's not on your if it's on ornamentals.
Now, Dave, talking about the weather, something that I'm interested in is sod, because mm-hmm. last week when you were on the show, you said, well, the first week of September, as long as the long-range forecast or the following 8 days forecast shows weather in the mid to upper 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not into September yet, but next week's forecast, which is unique for August, the high is going to be 88 next week.
Yeah, won't that be great? Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean we can move up sod planting?
Probably so. Probably so, unless we get hit. I mean, you can. You'll have the root system in. If we do get some hot weather, it'll be rooted in, and you're not going to have to worry too much about it, really, because, you could... This gives us a window of opportunity to take care of something a little bit earlier than we might have in terms of problem areas in the lawn. That
now, sod, though, because we've had the rain we had last week, do you have sod, or can they cut sod?
Well, at our next break, I'll call them and see. And if we can get 100 yards in for the weekend, then I'll have it there by this afternoon.
Okay.
So we'll announce that here later in the show.
Okay, because if so, I'll be out for sure. I've got to pick up some rolls. Okay, and so next week, fine to lay sod. Because,
it
again,
would be
it's
with this weather.
Cool down
if the weatherman's correct, sounds like it.
All right.
Boy, wasn't it a great morning this morning.
Oh, boy, let me tell you.
Fantastic.
Folks, for those of you that aren't picking up the Capital Journal each and every Wednesday, Dave Jackson has Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, a half a page ad. And it's always just chock full of information. And I know we've talked about some of this on the show before, but I had forgotten that this is planting season for cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts. Now's the time to get them in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to eat a cauliflower, broccoli, and for God's sake, not a Brussels sprout, but there are people out there that do eat this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And why, I don't know, but they do. But now's the time.
It's good. It's good for you, and it's good.
Well, it's good for you.
Uh-huh.
But Brussels sprouts, I can't imagine anybody eating it.
Really?
But they do.
Mm-hmm.
And now's the time, if you're a Brussels sprouts fan,
mm-hmm.
get it in the ground now.
Didn't that be
now,
great?
Harvest time for cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, when?
October.
Okay.
It was a great time. Well, if you plant them now, October would be a great time to harvest. You might get
60 days
early cab. Yeah.
It's going to be in the ground 60 days and ready to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What if we have a frost
in early October?
Are they frost?
These are frost proof. It takes an actual freeze to get you down to, we're talking in the lower 20s before you're going to cause damage to cauliflower and broccoli, Brussels sprouts.
Oh, okay. Now, now's the time to plant
mm-hmm.
Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you want to wait a couple of weeks? Don't want to do it quite yet.
Well,
what's the drop dead date?
About 2 weeks, probably.
That's it. So you've got to do it within the next
September the 10th. We really need to have that done if you're going to get any kind of crop at all.
Okay.
I mean, the plants will be growing there at my greenhouse and be getting some size to them. But you need to get them in where the roots can develop and that plant can really pop, get some size to it so that you get your heads out.
Okay. Reddish, turnips, lettuce, peas, green beans,
mm-hmm.
same thing.
Green beans.
Within the next 2 weeks.
Green beans really need to be planted by this weekend, really, if you're going to reliably have if we're going to have our frost at or around October the 10th, then you really need to have those green beans in by this weekend. But peas, turnips, radishes, those can you have 2 or 3 weeks on those.
Pretty much a 2 to a 3 week window.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the same as
your
other crops.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing holds true. Light frost, not going to hurt. Reddish crop, turnips, lettuce, peas, any of that. Just a heavy freeze.
A hard freeze will hurt them. Yeah.
Then you got a problem if it's a hard freeze, which we shouldn't be having hard freezes in late October. Okay.
You never know. This is Kansas.
Absolutely. Your biggest seller: cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, or Brussels sprouts?
I'd have to say the cabbage is always the biggest seller. We have 3 or 4 different varieties of that, depending on what you like to grow. Right behind that is broccoli.
Okay.
Cauliflower is number 3.
The attractiveness of a plant. Cabbage would be the most attractive? If you're doing it for aesthetic appeal as well as food production, what would be the best looking one to plant?
The cauliflower is pretty good looking out there too, really, because you really, it makes that big attractive leaf and it's kind of pretty. But if you had to say that one was more attractive than any of the others, it'd be the red acre cabbage, because it's a red leaf, kind of pretty out there.
Okay. So if you're looking something, you know, that has some aesthetic beauty and food content as well, it's called the
Red Acre.
Red Acre.
Or Red Beauty. I can't remember.
Okay.
Red Acre's the one that we've had for years. There's probably a new hybrid we're growing, and I can't even remember it.
Okay. So you might want to check that out, folks. And again, radishes, turnips, lettuce, peas, anything that needs to be done as far as soil treatment for any of these?
No. Just work it up and plant it. Okay. Use your root stimulator when you plant. You'll get it quicker. You know, quicker takeoff, less transplant shock.
All right. But basically the same for all eight
as far as
soil treatment.
Sure.
Okay. Very good. Hey, let's take a break.
All right. I'll
Dave Jackson,
make
Jackson,
a call on the sod.
And Garden Center will find out about sod. Stay tuned. More to come.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back with Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and you're cutting today.
They're cutting sod today, so we'll have 100 yards of sod there later this afternoon at the greenhouse.
Okay, your hours on Saturday and Sunday, you open at what time again?
8:30. We're there at 8:30. We're open
at 6
on Saturday. This evening, of course, and 8:30 to 5 Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday.
11 o'clock on Sundays, okay.
There'll be fresh sod to lay if you've got a spot.
You want to run through the prices for sod?
Sod. If you only need one roll, it's $4.99. If you need three rolls, it's $4.33. If you need 10 rolls, it's $3.99. And if you need the whole pallet, and we can load that pallet with our forklift onto your truck, it's $2.99.
Okay.
A yard, plus a pallet deposit. They charge me
now,
50.
A pallet's what, 50 rolls?
50 rolls. 50
rolls
in
a pallet. Yeah,
that's 450 square feet.
Okay.
So if
I think what I need is 10 rolls. So
10 ought to get it. That's 90 square feet. That's 10 by 9.
Yeah, that should do it.
All right.
That should do it.
Business for 4240, counting the governor's part.
All right. And you all load?
Yeah.
Good, good. Okay, so I can 10 rolls will go in the truck of a car?
Unless you're driving a smart car.
This is a big car, big car, big car. Buick.
Okay, yeah.
So should 10 rolls should fit comfortably in the back end of a Buick.
Yeah, no problem. Move your golf clubs.
Get the golf clubs out. That'll work. Okay. Sounds good. Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. And, folks, again, Jackson's is basically the only place in Shawnee County to where you can buy sod on a regular, dependable basis.
Right. We try to have it whenever it's available that's safe to put it down.
Okay. So, folks, check it out. That's where I'm going to be tomorrow, picking up 10 rolls of sod at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road. And, again, if you're a fall gardener, if you just tuned in, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, the whole nine yards, now's the time to plant them, as well as
radishes, turnips, lettuce, peas, and green beans.
Yeah.
And green beans do it now. The other eight mentioned vegetables, you've got a two-week window.
Right.
Doesn't have to be done this weekend, but green beans pretty much does.
Pretty much does. I'd say, yeah, for safety's sake, you'd want to have those in and done. And these need to be bush beans. Pole beans, it's too late, I think. Other thing that we're having that's big sale still is our if you've got pots, decorative pots or anything that are looking kind of worse for the wear in your and you want to beautify your patio, we have some great annuals that you can put back in your pot to make them, dress them up. You can bring them in and we'll plant them for you. And we're having dollar days. Your $3.99 plants are a dollar. Your $2.79 plants are a dollar. Your $2.19 four packs are a dollar. Your $3.99 four packs are a dollar. So we're just wanting to clean it out and get it gone until this is your opportunity. The stuff looks great. It's been a great summer. We've taken care of it. It'll just instantly dress up your pots and everything, and so that you have a great fall season going with your container pottery.
And this special is good until when?
Until Annette gets tired and throws it all away, which I would imagine will be at the end of, we got about 10 days, about Labor Day, and then she'll crank up everybody and we'll just start throwing stuff away. We'll have mom starting to be ready to sell, and we need to make room for those. They're in the back greenhouses. They need to come to the front, of course, so that folks can purchase mums and see what's going on. But that's probably about 10 days or so.
Okay. All right. And before Labor Day, just get it done. Get her done before Labor Day.
That'd be great. Yeah.
And that's right around the corner.
Isn't it?
Oh, I'll tell you, the summer has just absolutely flown.
Mm-hmm.
Flown.
It has. It has.
Which means you're only about 4 months away from Hawaii.
You're right. Yeah. I see. 4 months and 1 week. Yes, sir. You're right.
Because you always take off January. It's your month.
We leave late, right after Christmas, as soon as we can catch our free flight out of Kansas City. We use frequent flyer miles. And then we get back the week before, right ahead of the Flower Lawn and Garden Show. So it's a great time.
So you've got about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You're gone. Now, Jackson's is still open.
Absolutely still open. The people are supposed to be working hard planting the perennials. They take a lot longer. We grow them from seed. We bring in plugs from specialty growers that can do a better job with germinating the seed. And we're planting them fast as we can get them in the ground. And so that's always a fun time of year, just getting started with the new crop. This year we're, of course, there's always new genetics and there's new varieties and all of that kind of stuff to plant. And the array just keeps broadening of plants, the genetics and all that kind of thing.
Are you getting closer to a final decision on a new store?
It's going to, a lot's going to depend on the making my wife a believer in that. We're getting the proper zoning in place. That will be the real problem. I mean, or if there is one, if there's an early sticking point, it will be the zoning. So it's tough, of course, going to these shows and not knowing whether you're going to have one spot or two spots to display property.
How far in advance do you need to order plants? Well, you grow so many of your own.
We grow a lot of our own, but for some of our growers, we're coming up on the perennial growers. They take a longer lead time. We're coming up on the we'll need to decide. But the fact of the matter is, we have the capacity to produce. Our production is enough that we could, the new store probably won't have a big impact on us in terms of what we can grow. We'll just grow it a little bit quicker and more of it. Early order is coming on us right in the next 2 or 3 weeks, our early order period where we get the discounts, where they're growing custom stuff for us. We get a better price, and can, of course, that allows us to hold lower prices. If they're growing it on speculation, then we can always get it, but it costs a little more money.
It's going to cost you more money.
Because they've got the grower's got the risk until we decide to buy it.
Do you see much over the years you've been in this business, just a few years?
41.
This isn't your first rodeo. As far as flowers, whatever it may be, in and out of favor?
Oh, any, sure.
Any dramatic shifts from year to year? Or is it more of a gradual evolution?
It's an evolution. It's not a dramatic shift. You have the plant of the year every year and all of that kind of stuff. There's the perennial plant of the year. There's the new proven winners. There's the new, what do they call it? But garden plant of the year, whatever you want to call it, in vegetable, annual, and perennial varieties. There's all of those kinds of new things. But the shift, of course, is always more gradual. I mean, it used to be that everybody grew petunias. And
30 years ago, that was the flower.
That was the number one seller.
Today, it would be?
It's down probably 3 or 4 or 5 down in there.
What caused the drop?
I don't know whether it's because they don't provide by the end of the season. They don't. They're not looking so good. They don't have that great
fresh
look. Right. They get a little bit woody. We're talking standard petunias now. Then and you know we sell way more impatiens now than anything. And people have and impatiens, if you just will just keep blooming and blooming and blooming until the first frost, they're a little bit more colorful. And of course, the shift has been from annuals to perennials. People are looking for less maintenance and less labor to put them in, and they think maybe less cost as well. But perennials have become a bigger seller than annuals, actually, at this point. And the advantage to us, of course, is that we can sell all season long. You can plant perennials from March through October, mid-October, mid-March to mid-October. So that's extended our season. And there's been so much genetic work done that there's new plants out virtually every month that you can, that you bring out new colors and new attributes. All of that kind of stuff, it's just mind-boggling. So anyway, the shift has been gradual. It's annuals to perennials and petunias to impatiens, for example, would be what you'd think.
Vegetables, any dramatic shift over the past 30 years?
Tomatoes are always number one.
Always going to be number one.
Uh-huh.
Number two always has been, or has there been a shift?
No, it's always peppers.
Peppers has always been number two.
Mm-hmm. You're going to grow tomatoes and peppers.
Yeah, yeah.
What's come on more and more, of course, are the hot peppers for the salsas. People are.
That would make sense.
There's been a proliferation of different hot peppers and improvements in the hot pepper line in terms of production and the colors and all of that are available, and it's kind of interesting.
That would certainly make sense. That would be the up and comer.
Mm-hmm.
Would be peppers.
Yeah.
Anything that's fallen out of favor, so to speak, as far as vegetable growing, to where it was in the top 5 30 years ago, and today it's down in the top 15 maybe?
Probably squash. Probably. Not zucchini, but the other squashes probably are
fallen somewhat out of favor.
Mm-hmm.
Tough to grow?
Not tough to grow, just people are not much in the way of heating up the oven and baking a squash anymore. You know, one of those kinds of things, I guess. Maybe not enough microwave recipes for squash.
The food preparation aspect of it.
Uh-huh.
It's caused the decline.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah. Which is something else in your business you've kind of got to stay on top of.
Well, that's why you go to these shows.
to pick up that kind of information.
Right. And
because, again, you've got to order in advance if you're going to get the discounts.
Yeah.
So you've got to see these trains coming down the track.
Right. And, and there's garden writers at these shows as well. That's part of the people that we listen to on this particular go-around. We're some folks that write for magazines so that you know what they're going to be thinking about next year, what they're saying are the new hot vegetables or hot colors or hot, things that they're going to be featuring.
I know. We've talked about your business, I think, virtually every week. We mentioned that your business has never been better. You're just going gangbusters.
Still has. The past week was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we're thankful to our customers.
Is there any pocket to where home gardening it's in trouble? Where they've really suffered, with this economic decline.
Well,
is there a pocket out there that...
Really, it's the guys that the vegetable gardening, of course, is up big. Seeds were up big. It's the guys that was a minor niche in their business that are probably down. In other words, if you're mostly into nursery and big trees, the big ticket items are most of the garden centers will say the big ticket items are down in sales.
Mm-hmm.
Anything the cutoff. Kind of point is anything that's more than between $50 or $100, it's not moving. If it's under $100 or $50, you can sell it. So people are saying that the average ticket price was down at their garden centers, but the average traffic, and we're talking back in the spring season, average traffic was up. Most of the garden centers guys that I've talked to are up 4 or 5% for the year and happy, really happy to be up, because last year was a worse year. And so we're thankful we're up 30%. I mean, I have not talked to another garden center operator that's increased as much as we have.
Wow. You're doing something right.
I wish I knew what it was. But maybe it's the Jim Cage Show.
Well, that could be. Or the Dave Jackson Show.
That's it. Well, Dave and Jim. The Dave and Jim Show, which will be on again next week.
We will see you next Friday. Folks, thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll be with you at 8 o'clock Monday, and we're going to be with you for 2 hours Monday. And next Friday, we'll be with you for 3 hours. And one of those 3 hours, Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 10 to 11, each and every Friday. Have a great weekend, folks.